Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. In here, the result is always positive. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. During the next 3 hours, you may learn more about yourself, the stars, and your planet than you thought possible. Whether you're in a truck headed for the coast or listening from your computer or iPod tonight, we want you to get ready to explore the mysteries of the universe. We may push past your imagination, but that's okay, because in here, your potential is absolutely unlimited. Next week on X Squared Radio, we will have one of the world's top authorities on crop circles, Lucy Pringle, on the program. If you know anything about crop circles or you want to learn more about them from a real expert, this is the program. You don't want to miss it. I have been researching crop circles for many years, and just about every high-quality picture on the web today is copyrighted by Lucy Pringle. I can't wait for this program coming up. As an added bonus, we will also have a special hour on cymatics, the study of vibration-induced healing and holographic effects. In the news, just a little bit, I want to congratulate the Stardust NASA team on their successful re-entry of their comet exploration program. The last one, as you know, came in just a little bit hot. This one entered the atmosphere at 29,000 miles an hour, but it slowed down to a blue-haired 10 miles an hour before touching nicely down on the sand in Utah. Researchers believe about 1 million samples of comet and interstellar dust, most tinier than the width of a human hair, are locked inside the capsule. The dust grains are believed to be pristine leftovers from the birth of the solar system, with some of the particles thought to be older than the sun. Scientists hope to slice them into smaller bits and probe them under a microscope to directly learn about their chemical makeup and the processes that shaped the early universe. I hope they find some unique elements that we haven't seen before. Also in the news, we had a recent January 11th eruption of the volcano. Augustine lies within the area of uplift that resulted in a 1964 Alaska earthquake. And there was an earthquake associated with this one of about 5.6 on the Richter scale, and I believe that is still smoking. So it'll be interesting to watch the effect on the weather and the effect on warming from that eruption. As you know, the eruptions, earthquakes, tsunamis, storm activity, we believe is going to increase in frequency and intensity over the next half dozen years. So tonight, we are extremely privileged to have Dr. Rita Louise with us. She is an excellent author, lecturer, and highly accomplished intuitive physician who has been able to fertilize her natural gift of clairvoyance with formal training and education with masters of some of the world's most ancient and refined sciences. When I say refined, I mean purified or produced through exposure to intense heat and meticulous manipulation of elements over countless centuries so as to produce metal used in the construction work of God. If we are indeed fashioned in his image, these may be the materials he used. Medical intuitive, Dr. Rita Louise is a 20-year veteran of the alternative health field. She provides guidance, support, and encouragement as you begin to create a balanced life. Her website is soulhealer.com. And with the help of Dr. Louise, you will find the means to succeed in life, both personally and professionally. I've read her book, Avoiding the Cosmic 2x4, and you should as well. please welcome Dr. Rita Louise. How are you this evening?
I am wonderful. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, although it's a little frosty up here in my remote location of Madisonville, Kentucky. Well, let's see. I don't know where to begin with this book except right in the beginning. And for me, and perhaps for my listeners, one of the things that we would like to know, you're probably one of the best experts on, and that is the gift, the apparent ability to see the future or tell what's going to happen or tell what somebody's going to think. Do you call that clairvoyance?
Well, I mean, there are, when looking at it from a chakra point of view or to the energy centers in the body, there are four different gifts that we have, with clairvoyance being the ability to see energy. You know, so there's a visual aspect to it, where another way would be clairsentience, which is the ability to feel energy, or you have clairaudience or even telepathy, which are associated with the fifth or throat chakra, which have to do with a more audio type input. And then there is clairconsciousness, which has to do with you just know stuff. I call it knowingness because clairconsciousness does not show up in any spell checker anywhere.
Well, tell me about the seeing. You mean see with your natural eyes that you can see this?
See with your inner eyes. You know, and the example that I use with people is, you know, as we're just sitting here talking, I'm sure all of your listeners, as I say, can you see your car? Can you see the face of your mother or your father? Can you see the face of the person that kissed you the very first time, that special first person? And everyone can see those images very clearly in their mind's eye. And when we're having a clairvoyant experience, that is how we're seeing. It's not, you know, I always make the joke, you know, I always, when I was young, had this impression that it would be this thing floating around in the room or like a little movie projector would appear in a bubble in front of me. And that's not how it works.
Well, what was your first clairvoyant experience when you were able to see into someone or see something that was going to happen or that something someone was thinking, and you realized for the first time, hey, I may have an ability to see something that isn't tangible?
Well, you know, for me, it's a little bit of a bizarre story. When I was 12, there was the TV show The Amazing Kreskin, who's a mentalist. And there was also a series called The Sixth Sense, which isn't the movie, but it was a TV series that had a paranormal instructor who had ESP. And those shows were running, and my goal in life was to become psychic because I thought it would be the coolest thing in the world was to, like, see this stuff and know all this stuff. So I started reading and reading and reading and studied astrology and numerology and the tarot with the understanding, well, one, dating myself here in the late 70s, you know, any books on ESP were one right next to the witchcraft section in the library. And there wasn't a lot of material. But as time went on, you know, and the whole hippie thing happened, there was a lot more Eastern philosophy available that basically said that when you became enlightened, you would have, like, these psychic abilities as a byproduct of enlightenment. So I was like, okay, I'm going to become enlightened. And so that was how I ended up on this reading, learning path, because I figured if I learned enough, I'd become enlightened, then I'd be psychic, and I'd have this whole thing going on. And so years and years study, and, you know, I never saw, you know, anything floating around in front of me, which was my expectation of what would happen. And then finally, when I was about 30, I went and found the Berkeley Psychic Institute, another long story, and started studying with them. And after being in their program for 3 weeks, I mean, they had these psychic fairs, and then the program, you had to do so many readings a week as part of the program. And it's like I remember this so vividly in my mind. It's like that normally there were, I don't know, 7 beginning students because there was a 3-month beginning phase, and then you would move into the main program. And so there were about seven of us that were in this phase at that point in time. And for some reason, a bunch of the more advanced students that had finished this piece of the program decided to show up that night. And when you would do the readings, you would sit in what they call in line. And so you would sit in a row, and then the client would sit in a chair across, and whoever was like at the center of the row was the person who kind of guided things along. They kind of ran the show. And so being only 3 weeks in the program, I was like way down the last seat on the end on the left-hand side. And so this woman came in who owned a beauty parlor, and her complaint was that her beauticians were leaving, and with the beauticians leaving, so was the clientele, and her business was failing, and she wanted to get some information on it and to get some healing, because this was a healing clinic. And it was fascinating to me because the more advanced students were sitting there telling her about her past life contract about this and her apparent life, present life contract about that. And, you know, being from New York, what was going through my mind was, you know, that isn't going to get butts in chairs. So, but what was interesting was that in my mind's eye, this little projection kept coming of this woman with long red hair walking up to like a workstation and taking her purse and slamming it down on the workstation. And that imagery, that little piece of film just kept running in my mind. And so they asked, you know, does anybody have anything else to say? And so I kind of raised my hand. And the instructor, the woman who facilitated the whole thing, said, when you breathe, you have to close your eyes. And so I don't know if you've ever tried to talk with your eyes closed, but it's not an easy thing to accomplish, and it really takes you some time to kind of get into that place. So I closed my eyes and said, well, did you have this lady with long red hair that worked for you? And she said, yes. And I said, well, when she left, was she really angry? And she said, yes. And I said, well, her anger energy is keeping people from coming in the store. And I'm just like, la, 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 that's an interesting coincidence. You know, and I just, in my mind, just blew it off because it wasn't anything different than I had been doing my entire life.
Yeah.
Then, then I opened my eyes, and the entire row of psychics all were bent over in their chair staring at me with their mouths open.
Because they all saw the same thing, or you're the only one that saw it.
It was very, you know, I think in their mind, it was a very clear image that hit hard. And what I learned that day was validation. Validation is the most important thing.
What is validation with?
Validation is getting recognition that what you think and what you see and what you feel is real. So as an example, when I was like 20, 21, I worked at a company, and to make a long story short, the manager, who we didn't really talk that much, but I was friends with his lab assistant, you know, so he and I would just say hi. And so he didn't come into work one day, which was really kind of weird. And so the next day I went into their lab and, you know, walked over to the manager, and he was kind of bald, and he had a little round Band-Aid on the top of his head.
Mm.
And so in my sick mind, I said, oh, he probably has a zit, and it's red and pussy, and he put the little skin tone color Band-Aid up there so it wouldn't look so gross. But what came out of my mouth was, well, where were you yesterday, having to check for a brain tumor?
Uh-oh.
And his face turned white, and he walked out of the room. Minutes later, the lab assistant, now, meanwhile, every hair on my body is standing on end, and I'm shaking. I go back to my desk. The lab assistant comes in screaming at me. He thinks I told. And I'm like, told me what? He goes, that's where he was yesterday, being checked for a brain tumor.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, this was 20 years before I could connect the dots that was a very psychic experience, and that, like, regular people don't see past lives. And regular people don't know what they're getting for Christmas, you know, and regular people just don't do stuff like that. So in retrospect, I have been very psychic my whole life, but no one ever connected the dots for me.
Mm. So from the time you were 12 to the time you were 30, you were doing what you thought everyone could do, And that is sort of stepping out of the way of the rock that's falling out of the sky because you saw it and you thought everybody could do this. You didn't think anything was different about it until these very profound, validated experiences began happening. And then in retrospect, you said, oh, gee, I guess I've been doing that all my life, and that's not ordinary.
Correct.
Wow.
It explained why people called me Radar and, like, thought I was a witch and, you know.
Well, does everybody have these abilities and we just rationalize ourselves out of it, or is it different?
We do. I mean, I think most people sit there and go, well, that was a weird coincidence. You know, and we just blow it off. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like when you sit there and you think to yourself, you know, oh, well, maybe I should take an umbrella, and you look outside, you know, or that little voice inside goes, well, maybe I should take an umbrella today, and you look outside and go, ah, it's clear, I don't need it. And then, you know, you're going to leave work, and it starts to pour.
Well, you know, that's pretty interesting. There are communities in our sociology where not only do we accept that ability for humans to be able to see things we can't see with our eyes or hear things we can't hear with our ears, and even maybe things that happen in the distant past or things that are about to happen in the future. And they train their youth that this is part of their culture. Now, some of this is, you know, Aboriginal or ancient Indian, but some of it's, you know, modern, like I know there are certain religions that teach that there is a spirit, there's a Holy Ghost, a Holy Spirit that's kind of disconnected from time and things physical and carries special information like that. Some of it's for communal access, and some of it's just personal, just for you. And youth are taught early in their life that it's okay to access that. It's okay to listen to that. But what is the voice? I mean, are there people out there, or is this just truth floating around in the universe? How does that work?
That's a good question. And I don't have a definitive answer because I kind of don't know. But I will tell you what I do know.
Okay.
I feel like on a communication level, I mean, like, as an example, when I sat there and made the comment about the gentleman having the brain tumor, that information came in to me on a seventh chakra level, which some people can associate with channeling. And but it comes out your mouth, so there is communication associated with it.
Well, the information more than likely probably came from him, didn't it? I mean, he was kind of projecting that thought, and you picked it up.
Well,
his fear.
My observation, I mean, you know, because I've been doing this stuff a long time and, you know, contemplating on it just as part of my own information, is when things come in through the seventh chakra, there's usually the seventh chakra connects us with our spirituality, connects us with God. And what I have found is that when some information comes in through the seventh chakra, it is always truth, period. It's always truth. However,
so that's kind of I know in ancient writings, it talks about an enmity being placed between human people, human mortals, and evil. And what we have to learn is mortals, at least this is what's written in the Kabbalah, that what I've been able to gather from it, that we have to learn to check the feeling or check the entry point of this information, because there's only, you know, one way for truth to come in, and that must be it.
Mm-hmm. You know, but there's another way that we receive information, and that's on a fifth chakra level, which would be people that like work that are mediums or that communicate with spirit guides. You know, I don't know who those people are, you know, or that inner voice, that one that sits there and tells you, you know, you need to mow the backyard. You need to mow the backyard. You need to drink some water. You need to drink some water. You know what I mean? That persistent naggy voice.
Uh-huh.
You know, that comes in. I mean, for me personally, it's like I hear it out my right ear. You know, it's there. You know, it's not coming in through my seventh chakra. It's like kind of talking in my ear. Who they are, I don't know.
Well, let me see if I can get back on track. We're starting into almost the second hour's worth of stuff here. A lot of our listeners, some of them are young, because it just takes a computer right now to listen to our program, although we are rebroadcast on some radio stations. And one of the questions I hear a lot from youth, I get a chance to talk to youth all the time, they want to know if they have this ability, and if they do, who do they tell? How do they nurture this natural ability so as they grow older, they don't rationalize themselves out of it because of the stigma? Although I must admit, in the last few years, the stigma is kind of dissolving. But when I was young, I had a couple of experiences where I kind of opened my mouth and said things. And unfortunately for me, what I tune into are disasters.
Mm-hmm.
I remember an experience where I was sitting on the front porch with my mother, who was a clairvoyant and had no bones about telling people she was. And at that age, I was about 9, really didn't understand what that meant. But I turned to her on the porch one summer afternoon, and I said, "Hey, Mom, I think the power plant's going to blow up." And about 10 seconds later, it exploded.
And pretty cool.
Steam and metal went up into the sky, and it rattled windows for miles around. And my mom started crying, and I thought, my memory of this thought was that she was crying because the power plant blew up. But really, she was crying because I saw it.
Uh-huh.
And she realized that I had the talent. Unfortunately, I think I could hear Dawn in the background there. Unfortunately, for a couple of years, no one tried to develop that talent in me. So I just blurted out, you know, whatever was coming up. And that didn't go over very well at school at all. My brother was 9 years older than me, and he was going to Long Beach State. And they had a special class at night of psychology students that were studying child development. And one of the things that they were studying, this is in California now, was ESP. So my brother sticks me in that group. And I go up there, and I'm in front of a class with 40 or 45 college students who are asking me questions. That's all I can remember about it because I was very young. But maybe I was lucky in that somebody recognized I had the talent and somebody tried to measure it or validate it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think just having parents that are open to it and that aren't going to sit there and try to, you know, drum it out of you, you know, make it so that it can blossom, you know, and it's not something you have to put a lot of effort into opening back up because of belief systems. But let's go back to that. You know, somebody referred to psychic abilities this way, and I think it is probably the best way of explaining how everyone has them. In a very general sense of the word. If you think about it, everybody can draw. True?
Yeah.
On some level or another?
Yeah, although when I draw a grizzly bear, it looks a little bit like a hog, but yeah.
You know, but everyone can, and it's just that some people can draw better than others.
Yes.
You know, and so there are some people that are more open to receiving psychic information and to other people that are less open to receiving psychic information. But bottom line is, as human beings, that is a vehicle that we all have. We all have the possibility and the capability of doing it. And it's just some people are better than others. You know, and people that take art classes are potentially going to learn to develop their artistic ability and draw even better.
I see.
You know, and if you think of it that way, it makes total sense.
Are there classes or sources that young people, and I'm talking, you know, high school age kids, 15 to or 14 to 18, are there sources that they can go to find how to refine their artistic ability in this sense?
I mean, there are a lot of places that offer courses in psychic development, you know, and probably if they looked on the internet for their local area, they would find courses that are being offered that are relatively inexpensive in cost. You know, sitting there and reading it in a book, one of the things about doing this kind of work and developing it, it's really about practice and validation. And you can read, read, read. This is my personal experience. You could read for 15 years and not get anywhere except smart.
And so in your opinion, if we don't use it, we don't lose it. It just sort of goes dormant until we want to activate it.
Well, but if you think about it, we always use it. Let me give an example. You're driving along in your car, and you get that feeling that someone's looking at you, and you turn your head, and the person in the car next to you is staring at you.
Mm.
That is psychic.
I had a very good friend of mine. He has 11 kids, and they're all very close together. 11 kids in 9 years. Brave woman. Anyway, they were camping in southern Utah, and they were in a campsite and in a minivan, and they were supposed to stay there for 4 days, great trout fishing and just a beautiful part of the country. Well, 2 days, their second day there, my friend gets this impression that they need to move. They just need to pack up and let's go to the next campsite. Well, all the kids complain, Dad, you know, that we're just now getting into it. We've only been here a couple of days. We were on the road for 3 days getting here. And he said, no, I really feel that we should not spend the night here another night. Let's just pack up and go to the next campsite. So they said, well, you know how Dad gets, so the Fords all pack up their stuff, and they go in the minivan, and they head up the road about 80 miles to the next place. Well, that night, there was a thunder storm about 15 miles away from this spot, and it flash flooded the canyon, and there weren't even any clouds over this campsite. The water came rushing down that canyon and wiped out that campground.
Wow.
About 200 people lost their lives. That night, about 15 feet of water just came rushing out of this canyon for no reason at all and wiped this campsite out. Now, that's a serious impression that saved 13 lives.
And what I tell people is that when you have those weird coincidences, quote-unquote, happen, what you have to do is validate them. I mean, I have two stepkids, and they would come home, you know, and we'd be sitting, talking over dinner. It's like, I had some weird coincidence happen at school, and it's like, we don't have coincidences in this house. We only have psychic experiences. And so then they would come home, and they'd be like, I had a psychic experience in school today. I was thinking that when I go to math today, we're going to have a quiz, and we did. And the easiest, you know, it sounds kind of weird, but one way, and probably the cheapest and easiest way, is to sit there and say, this is what I thought, this is what I felt, this is what the impression I had, and this was the outcome. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to necessarily listen to yourself or follow the thought or the impression, you know, like the example I gave of, you know, something inside you said, well, maybe I should take an umbrella, and you didn't. But if you come back and say, well, you know, this morning I was thinking that I should take an umbrella.
And now I'm standing here in the rain.
Right. You're validating the impression that you had. You know, and I teach a medical intuition, intuitive counseling, and energy medicine training program, the distance learning. And I tell my students right up front in the training that I don't teach them how to be psychic. I just teach them how to become more aware of the information that they're already receiving.
Well, you know, sometimes people ask me, well, how do you know this is going to happen? Why shouldn't I go to Philadelphia this month? And I've learned some wisdom. Rather than saying, well, I'm psychic, I say, you know, I don't really know how I know. I'm just telling you, don't go to Philadelphia this month. You can take it for what it's worth. That's my contribution to you. And I found that it sets up much less of a stigma if it happens. Although I don't usually go around saying this to people. I've learned to keep my mouth shut over it. But I do write it down. And sometimes I'll show my wife, see here in my notes where I wrote this, now watch the news. And there it happens.
Well, there it is.
I'll bet you, though, that Brian Ford, that's my friend, that his kids, the next time he says, kids, I think we need to pack up and move to the next campground, I bet nobody hesitates.
I'll bet you. I mean, in my family, it's like, you know, I always joke around because, you know, I'll tell my family stuff. It's like, well, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if blah, 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 especially my husband. I'll go, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he won't, you know, and then I'll just look at him and go, you know, I'm telling you this.
I know that.
So maybe you should listen.
Because,
you know, I have been right maybe once or twice before, honey.
Well, I find it helps me in engineering. When I go consulting, which is what I'm doing up here in Madisonville, oftentimes I'll walk onto the job and they'll say, look, every engineer's looked at this. The customer's engineers have looked at this. We don't really know what the cause is. And almost without taking a measurement, I can just walk through the plant and my intuition, this, I don't even know what to call it. Maybe it is an engineering psychism, but or psychic ability. I'm not sure. I'll say something like, you need to rotate that mold 15 degrees and that'll solve the problem.
It's like, okay, bye.
Yeah, and they'll say, well, you haven't taken any measurements. I said, go ahead, pull your CAD drawings, grab that drawing, rotate it 15 degrees, and I promise you it'll work for both parts. Save you about $250,000 not having to buy more molds. And they'll sit down and they'll rotate it 15 degrees, and darn if it doesn't fit. And they say, well, how did you do those calculations? I didn't do the calculations. It just came to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't tell them that. I don't know how I do it. I just
make it up. That's what I tell people. I just make it up. And they go on, you know, especially I'll be like, blah, 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 blah. Oh, and blah, 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 blah. And their head is nodding like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, how do you do that? It's like, I just make it up. And they just look at me like, you're kidding, right?
What you find, you have to do that. I mean, how much business would I have if I advertised myself as a psychic engineer?
Well, you know, in that modality, I don't think it would really fly well. You know? But
I'm
mean,
sure
different people bring through different gifts and different information. You know, I mean, I had a girlfriend who one of the things that she was able to look at and clearly identify are what your past life and present life contracts are, different from those other people. I mean, she was good at it. And if you were having a problem with someone, she could sit there and tell you, based on contracts that you made prior to coming into the life, why you were having issues and, you know, the karma you were clearing. I mean, and that information just spewed through her.
Mm.
You know, or people that, you know, talk
it's
to dead people.
Easy,
I mean, they
friend.
Are just open and in tune with that vibration and that frequency.
I don't think I've ever tried to do that. Now, my mother and grandmother were just phenomenal at it, but it scared me. So I recently read a book, and it was a biography of mathematicians, which actually the book was recommended to me, and I thought it would just be exceedingly dry and boring. But it wasn't, because to a mathematician, when they reached the end of known math, and yet they still had a problem they were trying to solve or some vision that they had that they didn't quite understand, they describe, in the best language that they know, a spiritual experience of reaching out into this maelstrom of unknown. And literally, their heads just opened up, and pure knowledge poured into the top of it. One such mathematician, his last name is Chandra Sekhar, he's an Indian mathematician, literally derived math from whole cloth on his own. And he describes that whole formulas, finished formulas, came into his mind, and he just copied them down. And it took the mathematical community of the world years to find out that his formulas
maybe
were not only
true,
but they expanded the horizons of mathematics and cosmology to bounds that probably put him 50 years ahead of schedule.
I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, it's not what you would expect from such a pragmatic science as mathematics. And I was a little surprised at seeing that. It would be something that you would expect to find with an Indian master or, say, a yoga instructor, but not a mathematician. But here it was. Pure truth.
But it's just information.
So, but where is the information stored? Where does it come
out
from?
Out there somewhere.
Out there.
I mean, you know, this is kind of my, I don't want to say theory because it's not really a theory. It's kind of like, you know, people sit there and say, oh, you know, it's in the Akashic Record, you know, and it's, but it's like, do we really know? Has anybody been there? You know, only one person has been to heaven and come back, but they didn't talk about it. And so, you know, there's a certain amount that we don't know. So I just say it's out there. And I do believe that there is a conscious consciousness that we can tap into, you know, information. There is so much stuff that, I mean, like major parts of my book that I just was like, okay, well, what else do I need to write about? And I would get this list. You need to write about this. Up, 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 up. Like,
wow.
Okay. And I'd go and I'd do some research, and then I'd sit there with my little bit of notes and just start typing.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to say.
Wow. Well, I know as I was reading your book, I was just... I read a lot. I probably read more than a book a week because I have some guests that have written multiple books. And I underlined almost everything.
Well, thank you.
Every single sentence in it is like a postulate. It's just a statement of fact. One of the things that I am interested in, haven't found much on, except a couple of companies that are trying to sell it, and that's Curlian photography.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what Curlian photography is.
I mean, I'm not an expert on Curlian photography.
CBS
but,
radio.
Basically, it sits there and uses a specific technology, and excuse me for not being up to speed on my vocabulary, and takes the picture of the energy field around an object. And so originally, you know, they would put you could put your finger on it, and they would be able to tell you based on the aura that was projected onto the film, your state of health and vitality, how much energy you ran, things like that. Then they've also done things like they'll put a leaf on the film and run this current through it. And it'll show the aura of the leaf. And one of the parts that I think is even more fascinating is that they can cut the leaf in half and put half the leaf on the film, and it will show the halo of the missing piece of leaf.
Really?
And so, you know, you hear stories about people having missing limb syndrome, you know, where they lose their leg, you know, or a hand or something, and it itches or it hurts. And it's because the body remembers having it there. And usually what happens for people that have missing limb syndrome is they have the accident and they go, you know, and then as part of, you know, the accident or part of the surgery, they're knocked out, you know, they're placed unconscious. And so there's a disconnect in the body's memory system because it was there, now it's gone. And the body, the aura of it, the energy of it is still there.
Hmm. This is what I mean by a postulate in your book. You talk about research done by Professor Kim Bon Han, and where he's talking about the meridian system.
Mm-hmm.
He says the meridian system is formed during embryonic development and may guide the growth and development of the circulatory and lymphatic systems forming within 15 hours of conception.
Isn't that cool?
So this is like an energy blueprint of the human body.
Well, but if you sit there and you think about, and you know, you mentioned you're, you know, a student of the Kabbalah, you know, which is, you know, multiple lifetime student of the Kabbalah because there's just so much, you know, anything that manifests into physical form has to go through different energy layers to actually come into the third dimension. And the meridian system is actually, in my mind, the interface between the etheric body, which is the blueprint of the physical body, and the physical body itself. It's kind of like how it's constructed, you know, how the information is actually channeled into the physical body.
Sort of like a dimensional blueprint.
Well, I mean, the etheric body creates the blueprint, you know, like this is what we're going to build, you know, and then there is the actual building, and this is kind of like, you know, the foreman. This is, you know, this he's giving all the instructions, and I kind of feel like that's what the meridians do, is sit there and act as the interface between us as energetic beings and us as physical beings.
I see. And so if you're sensitive, that is to say you've got this set of eyes you're talking about where you can see this energy field, not with a Curlian photography technology, but just with your natural senses or your honed senses, and you could pick up these human energy fields, then you get an image or you get a feeling or an impression or?
Well, I mean, you know, I do a lot of work with individuals that are sick. I mean, that's kind of what medical intuition is about. And, you know, I tell people it tends to be multimedia, you know, because I'll look at something and so there's an image. But if there's a pain associated with it or a feeling associated with it, I pick that up as well. And when I say feeling, there is a physiological feeling, but then there might be like an emotional feeling. Because every disease that we have, there's usually some psycho-spiritual issue that underscores it.
And this is whether the person is projecting that to you or whether they're unaware that you're looking at it.
Well, I mean, this is just anybody. But, you know, it is just part of the process. I mean, because basically energy has to move and flow, and it's supposed to move and flow in and out of our physical bodies via the different subtle bodies that we're made up of, which vibrate at different frequencies. And so as the energy moves in my very scientific way, it gets honked up somewhere, and it forms a blockage. And so where those blockages are formed, it inhibits the movement of energy through the other body so that by the time it gets to the physical body, there's not enough energy moving it. And so if I look at somebody and I see that there's an issue going on with their gallbladder, better story. I had a client who had type 1 diabetes. She was diagnosed with diabetes of 10, which is usually type 1, juvenile diabetes. And he had been doing a lot of work at healing the pancreas and healing, you know, making it so that his body would release insulin. And he wanted to get some insights into, you know, what was going on, if there was anything further he could do, anything. And this gentleman was a chiropractor, so it wasn't like, you know,
he was just Joe Blow off the street. Yeah, he had experience in alternative medicine.
Correct. And he did nutritional counseling, and his father-in-law was an energy healer. So, I mean, he had a lot of support. And so he sat down, and the first thing that I said to him was, you have some issues with your mother. And he goes, no, all the issues are with my father. And I said, well, I'm telling you, it's not your dad, it's your mom. And he's like, well, what do you mean? And so this is based on me looking at the energy of his pancreas, because there was what was going on physically, okay, which was not producing hormones. But if you sit there and say, okay, there's the physical body, and then outside of that is the etheric body, then the emotional body, the mental body, and if you back out, this is kind of how I see it, if you back out your vision and shift the energy frequency you're looking at or interacting at, so by the time you get to the emotional body, I sat there and I said, was your mom all sugar and spice? And I said, and I'm using those words very specifically.
Was she
all sugar and spice?
Oh.
And he said, well, you know, they used to feed me milkshakes to fat me up because they thought I was too thin. I said, no, it doesn't have anything to do with eating. I go, was your mom all sugar and spice in her personality? And he goes, well, yeah. And I said, because the pancreas is associated with the third chakra, okay? And I said, what you did was you shut down your pancreas because your mom tried to control you and manipulate you with her sugar and spice.
How about that?
I said, and so you blocked it. And you made it so that you could no longer take care of yourself and manifest that way, because if you did, she would have been able to come in and manipulate you, and you were against that.
And this prevented him from having energy or producing energy with his third chakra. He just shut it down.
I mean, you know, there are multiple aspects, but in that aspect about not wanting to be controlled, there was a big issue around not wanting to be controlled. And then it turned out that he brought me cash for the appointment, which is always fine. And he said, yeah, I brought cash because I didn't want my wife to know. And he wanted to make another appointment, but he didn't want me to leave him a reminder call because he didn't want his wife to know that he had come see me, because she might say no. You know what I mean? So there was this long history about hiding and sneaking and not wanting somebody else to control his energy. But the underlying issue was his mom. And his mom was all sugar and spice. And, yeah.
How about that?
You know, so I mean, I have one client. And on our first session, I just, you know, was just like, blah, 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 you know, this and this and this. And, you know, oh, well, this is going on because of this. And some of it was physical. Some of it was just what I was reading off of her. And she looked at me and said, you know, I've been in counseling for 15 years, and it took us 10 years to get to everything you just said in this session.
Well, that's because you could see.
I know, and I just blab it out.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Well,
you know, but I mean, it's all layers, you know, and we get stuff and hung up because of certain beliefs that we have. You know, like that gentleman, he had the belief that, you know, if I don't protect it, they will take my control. You know, I had another client, and it was a kind of friend person who I was at a psychic fair, and she was at, she had a table down the aisle from me. And she said, you know, Spirit was yelling at me in the shower this morning that I needed to come have a session with you, so here I am. I'm like, okay, well, what do you want to talk about? She goes, I want to talk about my weight. She continues to lose weight, a lot of weight. And so, you know, I said, you know, oh, well, you're using your weight as protection and blah, blah, blah. She goes, yeah, I know. And, I mean, she was an NLP person. I mean, so she was a counselor and, you know, had worked in the healing field for a long time as well. She goes, yeah, I know that. What's under that? And so I made some commentary. He goes, yeah, work on that. What's under that? And so we went through this like four or five times, you know, and I'm starting to get into some really deep, deep issues. And she's like, yeah, know that. What's behind that? And so finally I was sitting there and I just started to feel myself trying to regurgitate, and my body started to convulse, and I was like, ooh,
wow. Ooh.
And I said, okay, what's with the throwing up thing? And boom, she started crying. And she was like, oh my God. She goes, when I was like four or five, I was already overweight, and my mother and my grandmother would basically force feed me fish.
Oh my goodness.
To lose weight. And I said, I know, now I know why you can't lose weight. And she goes, why? I go, because if you sat there and lost, it's like you're resisting, you know, and so for you to lose weight, it's like you have to give up resisting the idea of losing weight, if that makes sense.
I see. Quit concentrating so hard on it and literally having your life and your emotions and your relationships with others pushed around by the concern that you're overweight, and then everything will fall into place.
Well, I mean, she had her line so firmly drawn in the sand that I will not lose weight, and there's not anything you can do to make me.
Mm.
But that's what she was living, was she wasn't going to lose weight.
How about that? Well, let me take a few minutes here. I'll let you take about a 60-second break here in just
Ooh-hoo.
A moment. Dr. Rita Louise is our guest tonight, and her website, which I know she has been working on recently, is soulhealer.com. And her book is Avoiding the Cosmic 2x4. Where can they pick the book up?
I mean, it is available on my website. It's also available through Amazon.com. And probably if they talk very nicely to their local bookstore, they could order it from them.
I'm a strong believer in that. Please walk into your local bookstore and say you need to carry this book. Also, if you'd like to join us tonight in our next hour, you can call us toll-free at 888-268-4313. And as we get into our next hour, we're gonna talk about chakras and energy fields and intuitive healing and yoga. I'll tell you, this book is just a wealth of information. I'm actually on my second time reading it through, starting with my notes and then working back into the text that I marked up. And so we will take about a 48.5 second break while my producer plays a little bit of music, and then we'll do a couple commercials, and we'll come back for the second hour. What?
A 48-second break.
Well, it's 48 seconds. I recorded it. I know.
I know.
And if my producer's in the room, he'll pick up on that, and we'll play some bumper music and allow everybody to get a drink of water.
I did figure out why my webpage thing wasn't working, by the way, so I'm a much happier camper.
Oh, good.
You know, I was sitting there talking to this friend of mine. I go, yeah, I was talking to this guy, you know, I'm going to be on a show tomorrow. I go, but we were talking while I was working on my webpage. I go, that probably wasn't good because I was just like, just a little cranky.
Well, you were fine. I don't hear my producer in the neighborhood, so we'll just do a quick commercial here and we'll head on into the next hour. Did you know the Earth isn't from around here? Do you know who built the pyramids, Stonehenge, or the temples of the ancient Maya? If you could find a book that could answer just one of these questions, you'd buy it. The Ark of Millions of Years answers these and many more questions. Forward magazine calls it the most comprehensive book ever written on the creation of the Earth. Volume 1 is 530 pages long and may be purchased at our website, arkofmillionsofyears.com. Make sure you spell that with a K, like Noah's Ark, or your local Barnes & Noble store, or Joseph Beth booksellers, or Davis Kidd booksellers, and I think some other independents are picking it up. Volume 2 is coming out in 4 weeks, subtitled 2012 and the Harvest of the End Times. We've had some delays due to cover art issues, but we've resolved those and some edits at the publisher, but generally we're on schedule for a February release. If you want free shipping, while you're at our website, enter the word STAR, S-T-A-R, at the online store, and you'll automatically get free shipping. And if you buy the hardback this month, we'll send you the audiobook for free. That's a $25 value. And the production of that series is almost complete. That way you'll be able to listen to it on your iPod or in your car. Our guest tonight is Dr. Rita Louise, intuitive physician, author, lecturer. Her book, Avoiding the Cosmic 2x4, is a great book. It's in print. I'm holding it in my hands. I'm on 1.5 times of reading it. And this hour, we are going to get into some of the details of the chakras of the human body. A lot of this is mentioned I read the Sefer Yetzirah, which is one of the Sephirotic texts. It's not easy reading by any means. However, it was translated recently by Ariel Kaplan, who is a physicist. So it was a little easier for me to pick up than I thought it would be. And if you want to join us tonight, you can reach us at 888-268-4313 anywhere in North America. So I'd like to welcome back Dr. Rita Louise. Let's talk a little bit about the first chakra. I guess there are seven of them, right?
Yes, sir.
And the first
chakra...
Well,
there are seven major ones that run up and down the spine. But actually, there are, I don't know, there are a lot of chakras. And often, or can relate to the acupuncture points.
Ah, well, then I know there are a lot of them. I have a very close friend, Dr. Nick Begich, who is familiar with some of this. And I guess he's into acupuncture, but acuvibration. He's got a little probe and vibrator that he markets that you can actually put on. It'll detect the acupuncture point using body resistance, and then once it detects it, you can change its operation to apply a small amount of current to that location. And it has, well, I guess there's catalogs written on what effects would happen. But now I feel like I've just finished elementary school. There's more than seven chakras. I now feel like a dummy again when it comes to yoga. But what is the first chakra?
I mean, the first chakra is located at the base of the spine and is responsible for our how we relate to our survival information. So the way, you know, the way people can recognize, and I think this is where I'd like to go with this. The way people can recognize when their first chakra is being activated is by me telling you this little story. So just imagine that you have gone out, you know, to a club or something, and by the time you leave, it's like it turns out that all your friends have parked, you know, over this way, and you drove yourself, and your car is two blocks away in the other direction. And you start walking to your car, and you notice that there's really not very much light. And as you're walking around the corner, come these three guys, and they're being kind of loud, and they're a little scary to you. And so what's the first thing that happens? It's like our heart begins to race.
Oh,
and
sure
we can
does.
Hear everything that's going on, and our pace quickens. And, you know, if you're watching TV, you know, that's when you drop your keys on the floor, you know, and have to scramble and pick them up, or your shoe falls off. But anyway, and you go really quick, and you get in your car, and you lock the door, and then your heart starts to calm back down. And so this is where our fight and flight reflex is. It's associated on a glandular level to the adrenal gland. And so if we fear, if there is something that we fear, you know, and especially fear for our life, it will activate the first chakra. So if we have a job and there are layoffs going on, you know, it's like we're in fear that our survival is going to be interrupted, that our life is going to be interrupted. And so it will sit there and activate our stress. And so if people are experiencing a lot of fear in their life, in particular, it's usually because there's some kind of a first chakra issue going on. And also associated with the first chakra is our grounding cord. And I think everybody's heard that term, grounding or being grounded. And grounding is the way that we would let go of energy from our body. And so it's through the first chakra that we let go of energy from our body so that we're not overloaded.
So this is a mental exercise that we have to go through. We realize that we have to imagine a connection between the base of our spine and the ground.
I mean, I think that is a very effective tool to use. One way we can ground is to imagine that there is a line of energy that's going from the base of our spine at the first chakra to down all the way into the center of the planet, you know, and then putting out the intention. I mean, because basically anything in the energetic world or when you're doing energy medicine, it's all based on intention and visualization. You know, and so if you put out the intention or pretend would be another simpler way of putting it. Pretend that your first chakra is letting go of energy. You know, or the image I like to use is, you know, like on the hose in the backyard, there's the little spigot knob. And so you can turn the knob and open up your first chakra and allow the energy to just flow down that hose, down to the center of the planet, and just let it go from your body.
Now, is there... Well, you mentioned energy. I notice in your book you do a really good job of diagramming this. The electroencephalograph that's done. I don't know if everybody's had that done on their brain, but if you ever have had it done, it's pretty interesting to watch it and to see how you can manipulate it. But there are several classifications of that energy, like delta and theta and beta and alpha. Explain how those work.
I mean, you know, each of the different bodies in each of our different states vibrate at a different energy frequency. And so, you know, throughout the book, one of the things that I like to do is to relate things in ways that people can grasp it, you know, and that they can see parallels in the physical world. And so in science, it's like they have mapped the brain and we have the different brain waves. And so, like, if we're sleeping, we're in, like, a delta state and whatever. And so our energy also has these different vibrations and different frequencies. And so, I don't know, it was in there more in a comparison place, you know, anyway.
So these different bodies, you mentioned early, I think if I remember them right, one is the etheric body.
Mm-hmm.
And what is that, the one closest to us?
That is the one that is closest to the physical body. It
okay.
vibrates the slowest. It's believed that the images in Carillion photography, or if you have like an aura picture taken, it is showing that energy that's around the physical body.
So somewhere around 1 to 3.5
3
hertz? 3
feet, yeah, something like that.
That's for some of our listeners might not know what a hertz is, a cycle per second.
Mm-hmm.
Like a subwoofer, like those things, those cars that shake your house when they drive by where it's turned up really loud. That's probably somewhere around 20 or 30 cycles per second. We're talking way, way down in the sub-audio level. And what would be the voltage or the amplitude of a signal at that point? Like in the
Got
millivolts?
Me. You're the engineer.
In the millivolts or in the microvolts? Or
honestly, I don't know.
It's in any case, if you harmonize with different energies at that level, it has an effect on the body. I noticed mm-hmm. a little bit because the Navy has a set of sonic weapons that they use against the physical body, and they use them in the field to debilitate the body by matching these frequencies, and it has a tendency to non-lethally weaken or take out of action soldiers or enemies or crowds who happen to be in the way of this beam. Recently, it was used on a cruise liner. All cruise ships that are on the open seas are fitted with sonic weapons to prevent them from being hijacked. And recently in the news, I think it was less than 2 months ago, a cruise ship was attacked by a skiff with some folks with RPGs in them. And the captain followed the rule book, turned the ship out to sea at top speed, which, of course, they got enough fuel to outlast any kind of small boat, and fired the sonic weapon at the small boat and incapacitated those people in the boat.
They'd be pirates.
Yes. Pirates or, well, I don't know if they wanted to take over the ship or if they wanted to sink it, but it's kind of difficult for a dinghy to take on a 900-foot-long boat, but that's what they tried. And so the next body out is your emotional body. How does that one work?
And so the emotional body is where, and actually, let's kind of shift. Let's talk the other way because it would make more sense, I think.
Start with the outside and go
in. Start with the outside and go in because outside of our space is, you know, what would be considered the cosmic conscious, you know, where we connect to God. It's that unknown divide.
Huh.
And so when we come to the causal body, it is what separates us and individualizes us from the bigger mass consciousness that's out there. And it's not that we're not connected to it, but it's kind of like if you have a tub of water and you put a glass inside the tub of water, it gives it a container. And so the causal body gives us a container as a being.
Ah.
You know, and so it is what creates, and I'm going to say, the I of who we are. You know,
oh,
and so.
Okay. Like the me, the person.
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, people that, you know, and I think that's what people can wrap their mind around. I think when people have transcended the mental body, there is more that oneness or that feeling of oneness, or people that have done a lot of yoga or a lot of meditation have experienced the euphoria of being one with the universe. And so they're sitting and living at the vibration of the causal body. You know, and so, and there's not really an I there. However, for most of us in the three-dimensional world, you know, we can wrap our mind around it's what makes us us as an individual. That makes sense?
Yes, it makes perfect sense. Perfect sense.
And so the causal body is, you know, where we connect to God, and its goal is to have us be whole. And so, you know, spirit or whatever is always sending us information. You know, there's always, if you ask for something, the universe will provide it. And so if we sit there and ask for something, what we're going to get back is what we ask for. What is perfect for us, whether we as a personality, which is an aspect of the mental body, like it or not.
So,
because it's always going to give us what we need in that moment.
And it's probably not a coincidence that this is the highest frequency.
Correct.
So you actually have to raise your or align your consciousness with this higher frequency in order to tap into this causal body and be able to feel this euphoria.
I mean, we can tap into the information. If we can get out of our own way, we can tap into the information that's coming through. But to sit there and really experience on a, you know, that energy, you know, as part of our life integrated, I mean, I don't think there are people that can walk around and hold that vibration and stay in the three-dimensional world at the same time.
Oh.
You know
what
I mean? But I think everyone has had that experience, and people that are, you know, I'm going to say mystics or interested in pursuing that, that is the carrot at the end of the stick.
So you are in the world, but not of the world.
Yeah.
Ha, ha, ha. And how, this relates to which chakra or all these bodies?
The bodies do not relate to any specific chakra.
Oh, okay.
Because it's kind of like the envelope that we're in. I mean, there's multiple, well, cancel that. Each body on it has its own set of chakras. And let's talk about the function of the chakras. The chakra's job is to send, receive, and assimilate information from the world around us. That is what the chakras do. And so what happens is that energy from the universe comes to the chakra, and then the chakra filters it. And so you'll relate to it in this way. It's kind of like a transformer. And what it does is it takes energy from one vibration and converts it into a different vibration.
I see.
So as an example, you know, this I think everyone will get that's listening. If you sit there and you have a tape recorder or a CD player or whatever, and you want to plug it into the wall, usually on the end of that power cable is some kind of a transformer. And what it's doing is taking the 60 hertz that's coming in from the wall and converting it into 9 volts DC or to some other frequency that the CD player can handle.
I see.
Because if we plugged it directly into the wall, it would not be a frequency that it could use or assimilate. And that's what the chakras do. That is their function.
That makes perfect sense to me.
You know, and so, like, from a Kabbalistic point of view, if you sit there and on the causal body, there's a chakra. And so where that is, if you're going in, if you're going from the causal body to the mental body, inside between the causal body and the mental body, how do I want to explain it? The chakra acts as the interface, and so just inside would be the the first seraph, because that is the highest frequency of the tree of life. And then it would go through between the bodies and end up on the first seraph, which is where the chakra of the mental body is. It goes through the chakra and it gets picked up by the first chakra, the first seraph of the next tree. And so you can have your tree stacked up in the interface between the first and the tenth, between any of the two trees, is where the transformer is.
I've got it. Yeah, so if you're looking at the Sephiroth, which is the sort of a graphic, stylized tree of life that's in the Kabbalah, you can see the pathways that the energy moves from point to point. And it has to obey these laws or rules, and it doesn't fall outside of this pattern. And if you don't live correctly, all that communication stops.
Correct.
And you become disjointed with your true purpose, with your true being.
But given enough time and enough repetition, it will filter all the way down to the physical body, and you get sick.
Wow.
I mean, that whole section with that whole image of the transformer and moving through, that was a couple of months of just meditating on that image and what was the implication and what did that mean and how do you represent it. But see, this is going to sound a little weird, but you'll get it.
You just needed to study electrical engineering. That would have
been
that.
Well, actually, in my past life, I was an electromechanical designer. Not that I knew electrical engineering, but I mean, I had a grasp of it.
That's
so
right.
So I had a bunch of books out, you know, that were electrical books in general. But it's like, how do you take that information and convert it into a spiritual principle? Oh.
So in volume 8 of your book, you'll get to that, right?
Actually, that was an area that I had to just put down because it was just beyond me. I mean, I don't want to say it was beyond me, but it was like just another course of study that was just like, you know?
So the next body in then is the mental body.
Okay, and so the causal body's goal is to have us be whole because it's connecting us to God, our higher purpose, all the good stuff. When we get to the mental body, this is where things usually get screwed up for people because in the mental body is where our personality and our ego is located. Okay, and so if you sit there and you're thinking, okay, energy is moving in and it hits that mental body. So depending on who we are and our life experiences, our beliefs, our opinions, our assumptions, our judgments that are formed as we grow and live, they're going to affect how we react to things.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so as an example, and I always, you know, kind of, I mean, this is like an exaggerated example, but if you were brought up in a place that was racist or, you know, was very judgmental one way or another, and it's like it's going to affect how you process information. And so someone that is perfectly nice, you know, very helpful to you, looking to help you succeed, can come into your life, but if they don't fit into that criteria, you're going to stop it.
I see. So you mentioned environmental effects.
Mm-hmm.
Of the early development of your mental body, that you have, the perceptions of your world,
and that can happen.
Prejudgments that we make are all influenced by that.
Well, it forms it. It becomes the basis of our reality. So, as an example, if when I was 25, I found out that my husband was having an affair. And at the same time, he was very abusive to me, and then he left me, and blah, 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 blah. It's like it's going to have some kind of effect on my belief and belief system, you know?
Yeah, yeah. All men are pigs.
That's right.
I know where that's coming from. Do we have a caller on the line? No. Okay. I just heard the beep and I thought maybe there was someone on the line. Yes, I understand where your environment influenced your, it didn't influence. You say it actually forms your mental body.
It creates the little robot. It puts the resistors in the flow of energy moving through it.
Now, does our, when we become self-aware, that is to say, we realize that we're able to act, not just be acted upon. Do we have any ability to reconstruct that mental body?
Mm-hmm. Can you write that down as a note? Can we come back to that?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It will make more sense when we get through the emotional body.
Oh, okay.
It'll make a lot more sense.
All right. Well, now is this where our intelligence is, how we figure things out, where
I mean,
our ideas
it is,
come from?
But from an energy movement place, it's not. I mean, it is, but it's not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not the brain. It's our thoughts. And we can have a thought that's not necessarily, you know. Well, I mean, I don't associate, you know, a thought has energy in and of to itself.
Sure.
You know,
I agree with
and
that.
So. And it gives things forms. In the mental body, it takes an energy and it gives it form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes an inspiration because the causal body is about inspiration and about, you know, movement. And so the mental body, it gives things form. And so it takes this ambiguous nothing, basically, and says, oh, I want a red car, you know, or, oh, I want to have a hamburger for dinner. You know, it gives things form, but in a mental, cognitive way. So, I mean, I guess it could have a certain amount to do with intelligence, you know, but it's more about giving form.
I see. And, of course, as we become more experienced, that is to say we gain more aptitude with different skill sets, like you were mentioning earlier, that in your past life you had some electronics training. That helps your mental body give a causal interpretation form.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, one of the things that I tell people that are interested in developing their psychic abilities, and one of the things that I'm adamant about in my training is that it's not just technique. There needs to be intellectual information that you can sit there and draw from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, well, you just do it. Because if you don't have the words and you don't have the vocabulary and you don't have the cognitive function, let me give you a quick example. Years ago, before I went back to school to get my degree as a naturopath, I was working on a woman, and I looking at her, and there was this glop of black energy that was sitting on her. And it took me a while. Kidney. Yeah, I think it's your kidney. Yeah, it's your kidney. But it was a glop of black energy.
Wow.
But because I – no, it gets better. But because I have – studied anatomy and physiology, and I have a deeper understanding, mental, cognitive understanding about what a kidney looks like, how it's supposed to function. You know, not necessarily what would break in it, but how it's supposed to function. I can sit there and go, well, when I sit there and look at it, there's some inflammation on the tube of the kidney that goes down to the bladder, and it's not filtering, and there's some gravel that's sitting in there. Oh, well, there's this little abscess going on over here, blah, blah, blah. And so it's not a glop of black energy anymore because I can sit there and use my filters to get more specific because I know more.
I got that.
You know, but a lot of people, you know, like, oh, well, you should just know. It's like, yeah, right.
Well, that would be sort of like receiving the detailed plans for anti-gravity drive and not knowing a 16-penny nail from a rock.
Right.
As far as aptitude. Now, notice that I'm not saying that you have to be intelligent to do this. All kinds of different levels of intelligence or abilities to quickly assimilate information have these abilities. And there are even savant people that have these abilities. But what I'm talking about is aptitude. That is to say, what you learned in school, how many books you read, what kind of subjects you have gained some skill or some reading level knowledge of. Otherwise, you're really not going to know what it is you have received. You won't recognize it.
Correct. Absolutely correct.
Very good.
Okay.
I'm learning.
Okay, so now we move down to the emotional body, and this is where it gets interesting. So like in the Kabbalah, the mental body is about giving form. In the emotional body, it is energy in motion. So an emotion is energy in motion. And so there's not a...
There's our other interview. What is your dog's name?
It's Bitsy.
It's our live
alarm system. If someone knocks on the door, the alarm system goes off. That's how I figure it.
I see. That's your other doorbell.
That's the other doorbell. No, it's the alarm system.
So the emotional body sort of gives the current behind the voltage.
Correct. And so if you have a thought, a thought is in the mental body. And so what the emotional body does is it takes that thought and transforms it into an energetic vibration so that it can move down into the physical body. Mm-hmm. So as an example, I could sit here and make a commentary about, using the example before, someone that is racist. It's like, if you sit there, if you made some comment to me, I probably would be like, no big deal. But if you made a similar comment to someone that had very strong opinions or ideas about it, it's like it's going to trigger some emotion in them.
Oh, I see.
So there is a triggering part, but that triggering is part of the ego, if that makes sense. And so it's based on our beliefs, our experiences, our judgments. I'll give you a personal example. It's like I personally kind of have an issue with all the pornography on the internet, and you get emails with porno, and now it's on cell phones and stuff like that. And I have an issue with it because I don't think that it needs to come into your home that way. I've sat here when I was getting gazillions of emails every day. My kids would come around and stand behind my desk.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, excuse me, I don't need this. I didn't sign up for it. So why are you coming here? Strong opinion.
I have dial up at my house specifically for that reason, because when I had broadband, cable modem, I was connected all the time. And so you could be working on a Word document or in the middle of a spreadsheet, and bam, here would this image come up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have my kids in there doing their homework, and they'd go, Dad, I'd come in there and here'd be this, filthy ad on my computer. So I canceled the broadband and I went back to dial up because when it's off, it's off.
And so as you can see, and it sounds like you have an opinion about it too. And so if that is happening in my home, I am going to have a reaction to it.
Yeah.
Okay. There are other people, it don't matter. It's fine. There are a lot of, and I'll say guys that it's like, hey, that's a great thing, And so their emotional reaction is obviously going to be different than mine.
Well, I don't know. Maybe
if they have a reaction.
To me, I have an emotional reaction the other way, because to me, I see primarily females victimized. I don't see, it's another issue altogether.
Yeah, that's another issue, but it's something that people either have a very strong emotional reaction to one way or the other.
Yes.
And even in the strong emotional reaction, there is a variety of, like to me, I find it very offensive, but to somebody else, they might find it good and appealing, and then to a third person, they might have no reaction at all. And so, the thought is, or the image is, you see it, and then the choice is to have a reaction to it or not.
So that gives, that reaction is what gives the voltage, the energy to the idea that you formed.
Here, let's do a little experiment. This is a fun one, and everybody that's listening can join our experiment because it's a no time, no space kind of thing.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay. I want everybody to imagine that sitting in front of me, I have a nice, juicy, ice-cold lemon. And I'm going to take my knife, and I'm going to cut it into quarters. And then I'm going to pick up one of those quarters, and I'm just going to suck on the lemon.
I'm Pavlovian.
Now, did your mouth water, or could you feel the tartness in your mouth?
I could.
So the thought of me chewing on a lemon created an emotional response in you, which filtered down into your physical body and created a physiological response in your body, which is a feeling of some kind or another.
It sure did.
You know, and so when you go, you know, there are so many things that are in that process. You know, the other example I like is you go into work one day and there's this note sitting on your desk from your boss that says, come see me.
Ooh.
And that's it. Just a little paper. Come see me. And
sort
so
of
most
like,
people,
we need to talk.
Yeah. And so, I don't know, just come see me would probably be good enough for me. You know, and most people
you'd start cleaning out your desk right then, wouldn't you?
Well, that's most people's first response is something negative is going to happen, or there's something bad, or you did something and you start going over, you know, and your heart starts pounding and you start, your hands are sticky now. You know what I mean? There's this whole response. And then you get to your boss's office and, you know, you had been talking a couple of weeks ago about some book and he got the book and he wanted to show it to you. But it's the thought that you have to go into your boss's office that created this reaction, that created all of these physiological responses in your body.
I just had it again. So, and it's powerful because the emotions are what, you know, drive the hordes across the frozen tundra with the battle axe in hand. You know, it's the pump of getting everybody fired up to do something, or getting yourself fired up to do something. That's
exactly
the emotion.
Because it's energy in motion. It's taking that thought energy and converting it into something that we can respond to on a physiological level.
And the emotion's something we draw up, you know, from within ourselves, right? This isn't an external thing that's coming to us. This is the choice. Well, it may not be choice, it may be instinctive like the lemon was, but it's a conscious filling of the battery for that image that you formed.
Mm-hmm. And based on our beliefs and, you know, opinions and judgments and life experience, it can be a positive reaction and open us up, or it can be a negative reaction and shut us down.
Now, I guess another odd question. Can we, through experience or through training or through meditation, learn how to, I was going to say control emotions, but how about deal with the emotions so they don't get so high voltage, they don't control us? I guess what I want to say is I know people who are completely emotional beings.
Mm-hmm.
They just wear their feelings on their shirt sleeve, and whether they're leading a meeting or doing a sales call, their emotions are right out there. They have no control over them. They're totally controlled by their emotions.
You know, and as human beings, it's like it's appropriate to have emotions, both good and bad. You know, so anger is an appropriate emotion in some situations. Fear is an appropriate emotion in some situations. It's when we have the preponderance of those emotions in every situation, or have a plethora of negative emotions, you know, in given situations where they become unhealthy, or when we're not expressing our emotion. And that's usually where we get messed up, you know, and I'm talking more from like a disease model. You know, is that if we choose to hold on to the emotion and do nothing and say nothing. So if, for example, and I'll use a work example, you go into a meeting, and by the time you leave the meeting, you find out that you've got four new projects, and they're all due by 3 o'clock, and everybody else walked out and didn't get anything to do, and now you're feeling overwhelmed and frustrated and all of this stuff. And so instead of going to your boss and saying, oh, well, you know, this is what I'm feeling, or, you know, I can't do this, or, you know, making some communication, you go to your coworker and say, yeah, my boss, blah, 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 blah. It's like you're not fixing anything.
I know exactly. I've seen that happen.
Over and over again.
Oh, boy.
You know, and so you're not really addressing the true concern. You're not really addressing the primary cause, which is your boss that just dumped a bunch of work on you. Because that takes a lot of cojones, as they say in California.
Well, we have a lot of listeners out there whose bosses, I'm sure, fit into that problem category. So you hear that, listeners? It is your boss that's the problem.
That's right. But, you know, it can be our friends. It can be our husbands. It can be our wives. It can be our children. You know, it can be anybody. You know, and just sitting there and saying, this hurts me. This is, you know, ideally the emotions we should experience, you know, should be transitory, because it's just an energy in motion. And we've all had the experience where we get mad, but then a couple of minutes later, we're fine. You know what I mean? We let the anger move through us. We let the frustration move through us. And that's fine and appropriate. It's when we hang on to it and get resentful.
Like grief. Holding on to grief and not finally, you know, letting it out and having it, taking the journey with it and being done with it.
And letting it fester inside of us.
So we have this interface between the universe and our physical body, and it's this four-layer. We started with the causal and the mental and the emotional, and now we're back to this etheric body.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the final filter before we
Correct.
Get to the physical
body. And this
body.
Is another layer of form, and so it takes what was a mental form. You know, it's been given energy and charge, and now this is the pre-physical form. And so, like, as an intuitive, a medical intuitive, it's like many times, even though I feel like I'm looking in their physical body, what I think the reality is I'm looking at their etheric body. I mean, and there are health issues that I've sat there and said, oh, you know, are you having a sinus infection or something? And they'll go, no. And it'll turn out, you know, the next day their sinuses start to bother them because it's already showing up
in
the etheric body.
Wow.
You know, so that's always kind of fun. You know, and one of the things that I tell people is that if something manifests in your physical body, it has been in your energy system for a very, very, very long time. And by the time it's hit your physical body, it means that you have ignored it for so long that this is just the final way, well, short of dying, you know, of it trying to let you know that there's a problem going on.
Well, maybe they're like me, though, that maybe all of these things have been trying to tell us for a long, long time we're doing something wrong or we're not doing something right with our body or the way we live, and we couldn't recognize it. We just knew something was nagging us, and then here we end up with arthritis or diabetes or a heart attack or whatever, which is sort of the final wake-up call. Hey, I've been trying to tell you for the last 20 years that you've got a problem here, and now I'm going to hit you over the head with a 2x4.
But the reality is we always know.
Really?
We always know. We just maybe can't connect the dots. I mean, from a very simplistic point of view, you know, a lot of people that get sick, I mean, not everybody, but there's a definite percentage of people that, you know, I'll use my dad. I mean, it's like he has gout. Okay, he gets gout. Well, I mean, gout is the formation of uric acid crystals in the body. And so people get gout because they don't drink enough water or their body doesn't handle protein digestion in a good way. And so if your body normally doesn't handle protein digestion in a good way and you don't drink any water, which is my dad's case, you get gout.
Huh.
Okay, and so I'll sit there and say, well, you know, gout is the formation of uric acid crystals and the purines in your blood, blah, 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 and I'll tell them this whole thing, so you really need to drink some water and maybe cut back on your protein consumption. Well, I take a pill.
Yeah, just take a pill.
It's like, you know, I bought him some cherry juice, which is a natural remedy for gout, but I doubt he'll even take that because he'll take a pill. And so most people are of that mental, you know, it's like a lot of people know, well, I don't eat good. You know, or the one I liked is, let me kind of shift gears here a second. The causal body is always trying to let us know what we need to do. It always does. And it is that little nagging voice that sits in the back of us. I mean, it might come through our spirit guides. And, you know, that's why I said I don't know who that nagging voice is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always telling us what we need to do to be whole. Always. And so, you know, I'll sit there and say, you're going toward the kitchen because you want something to drink. And you ask yourself, what do I want to get to drink? Okay, because it's always, from an energetic point of view, the third chakra and below are instinctive. And so they relate to the physical body. When we come into the higher chakras, it is from a reflective point, and so there's always questioning that needs to be associated with it. So, but most of us, when we want something to drink, we'll ask internally, well, what do I want to drink? True?
Yeah.
And so if that little voice says, you need to drink some water, and you go and you grab a Pepsi, you're not listening.
Yeah, I know. Mine usually says, you need to drink some water. But cold milk would be good, and while you've got that cold milk, you might as well grab two or three Oreos to go with it.
Well, I don't think it's that voice.
I know. I'm kidding.
It's that other voice. I know that one, too. You know, but usually the first one to speak up is the one that tells you to drink the water, and then that other voice comes in and goes, but you know, there's some Oreos in there that would be really good.
A lot of current religions teach that that's a still small voice, and that if we become skilled at listening to it, as opposed, you know, not letting it be drowned out by the world or our own ego, that we can become closer to God.
Well, that's because we're connecting. When we sit there and start listening to that voice, and whether the information comes through visually, auditorily, feeling-wise, and honoring it,
mm-hmm.
it allows the flow of energy to move in through the causal body all the way down to the physical body and back.
Wow.
You know, it just, because if we sit there and say, well, I don't want to do that, well, now we've just stopped the movement of energy. If it says, you need to drink some water, and we say no, we've just stopped that energy flow.
Yeah, because you have choice. You've got your free agency to let the energy that you've sensed with your causal body reach your etheric body. You've made a choice to stop it.
You know, and as I tell people, you know, you can choose to listen or you can choose not to listen. And people go, well, what about free will? I go, that is the free will. You can choose to listen or you can choose not to listen.
Exactly.
You know, it doesn't have anything to do with, well, I have free will to do whatever I want that's not part of God's will. And I hate to be so religious sounding, but I don't know any other way to say it.
Well, yeah, that's, I understand what you're saying. They're really, sometimes, truth is truth. And it's okay here or anywhere else, as far as I'm concerned, to say that that's what it is. So now we've got through these four bodies to the etheric or to the physical body. Now
the physical body's the physical body.
The etheric body is the physical body?
No. It is the blueprint of the physical body. And so it really doesn't do anything but form it. Because the emotional body sets the vibration of what is going to be formed. And so if the vibration that we are projecting through our emotional body is defective, the etheric body, in turn, will be defective.
I gotcha. And that's what you intuitively have been able to hone your skills at being able to see and thus interpret that for people or help people with that. So now we're to these seven chakras, which I know now that there's many, many more acupuncture locations, but the main seven chakras. We talked earlier about the one at the base of the spine through which we're grounded and our base instincts of fight or flight come from.
Correct.
What's the next one?
Well, let me just kind of reiterate one point that I made that I think will make more sense now.
Okay.
That each body has all of the chakra points as well.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Because that is the way information is transmitted between the bodies. You know, so that's how they connect to one another and to us, is through these, like, little power cables. You know, and the plug unit or the transformer is the chakras. And so, you know, that's the movement. Okay.
So these are the comm ports for each of the bodies to our soul.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like I said, it took me a long time to just... It's a very complicated sitting there and segregating it out. And it took me a long time. And, you know, you were talking about, well, your next book is about going to be about the science. And actually, I would really like to write a book about what is the energetic experience of each chakra as it sits in each body. So what is the experience of the third chakra as it sits in the mental body, as opposed to the fourth chakra as it sits in the emotional body?
Wow.
Now, that's a nightmare, just even sitting there trying to segregate all of that.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but if it's in no specific order, you're talking about 7 factorial, which is a big number.
Well, I'm just talking about the 7 major chakras, and actually I've already started kind of working on it, but it's not this week's project. I mean, it's achievable, but it's just... Well, if you think about it, a deck of tarot cards is a representation of each of the serapha within the 4 bodies. And actually, that's what I would be doing, would be based on Kabbalistic.
Huh. So tarot cards only cover a very small part of the sephirotic relationship.
Well, they cover the number cards, so like the 1 through king, which we can relate to like a regular deck of cards, represent the sephira specifically. And then the court or the major arcana, which is like the death card and the tower card and the wheel of fortune card, are the lines that connect each of the sephira together.
How about that?
And so those are considered the paths.
Well, I understand that part, and I did say that my mother and grandmother were into that kind of stuff. What always bothered me about it was the randomness with which they just shuffled the deck and things came up the way they came up. That's what I had the problem with. But
well,
that's another story.
I do tarot readings, sort of. I mean, I used to more than I do now at different psychic fairs because, you know, that's what people expect, is you throw out some cards on a table and it's like, okay, this is what I'm going to tell you. And, but I don't, you know, one of the things I figured out is that I have no memory for certain things. And now I understand that spirit doesn't want me to memorize certain things. So like tarot cards, there are some that I know, and there's a lot. And I mean, this is after years of trying to learn it.
So don't force
it. Doesn't stick. It just doesn't stick.
Yeah.
But I'll read tarot cards. It's like, here, throw them out. This is what it is. And there were all these tarot readers, like quote-unquote tarot readers, that knew what all the cards meant that would come to me for readings. And I'd be like, well, I hope this card kind of means, you know, what the book says, kind of. But they never complained, so I figured I must have been doing it. But anyway, okay.
So we'll start over with the chakras.
All right, we'll go back to the second chakra.
Okay,
the second chakra is located just below the navel. It is associated with our ability to feel energy, and it's associated, which is our clairsentience. It's also associated, and let me just kind of do a quick description. I'm going to come back to clairsentience. It's associated with our creative energy. In women, it's associated with the baby making machine, which is part of that whole creative process. And so that's where the creative nature of it comes from. Organ-wise, it's associated with the sex gland, so the testes or the ovaries, which is in that area.
Uh-huh.
And it's about our ability to feel, you know, and not feel in a intellectual, emotional way, but to feel on a physiological, in the body kind of way.
This is what people, like unskilled like I am, would say a gut feeling?
Yes.
Like
I mean, a lot of times they will associate a gut
right
feeling
here.
With the third chakra, but it's kind of a combination between the two, but pretty much it's a second chakra thing.
Okay.
So, you know, people always sit there, you know, this is one of my fun things to do when I'm giving a class. I'll sit there and go, the second chakra is associated with clairsentience, the ability to feel energy. Does anybody in the room, you know, are they clairsentient? And I maybe will get one person to raise their hand, maybe two. You know, I get a lot of blank looks. And then I sit there and I make it so that a person can understand it on a body level and how everyone listening will be able to recognize how they use this ability all the time.
Yeah.
Have you ever walked into the room and felt the vibes of the people in the room?
Yes.
Have you ever gone and done something and just had some kind of feeling about it or met someone new and just, you know, got the creeps off of them or thought about doing something? You're like, well, maybe I should go to the store, and just had some feeling. I mean, there's not any like mental piece to it, just this feeling of maybe I better not.
You know, I'll tell you a personal experience. I one of the speaking assignments that I had was to go to speak to the Rotary about the company that I was working for at the time. And I took the company PowerPoint presentation, and I went, and there were about 75 people there from all over the community, and I gave the PowerPoint presentation, and it went pretty smoothly. It was just pure information about where we came from, why we're here, and how many people we have working for us, and what we do, and I got finished, and there was about 10 or 15 minutes left in the presentation time, and I got this overwhelming impression that that they didn't want me to end. They wanted me to talk about something else, and they needed something. And the impression I got was, well, let's just throw something out there. I said, do you know that I just wrote a book? And everybody, I saw, it's like pig ears flapping, you know, they all flap at the same time when you photograph a bunch of pigs in a corral. If they're all sleeping, one flaps their ears, I promise, within a quarter of a second, every pig in the place will flap their ears. Well, everybody sat up at the same time. And so I said, well, I just happen to have another PowerPoint presentation. It takes about 7 or 8 minutes to go through really quick if you'd like to see it. And everybody said, yeah. So I sold about 20 books at a Rotary meeting where I was supposed to talk about our company. And it was just this feeling I got from the room that they didn't really care about hearing about the company. They wanted to hear something really, you know, about outer space or about the creation of the earth. So I just laid it on them. And then also I've walked into rooms where I've been assigned, you know, it was a lecture about the book or about something that I've spoken about. And I just get this icy chill off the room. And so I just kind of go through the hard data only and don't get off into the more esoteric things because I just know they're ready to pounce on it and cut my head off.
Mm-hmm. Nope. But I mean, and honoring that feeling, you know, and acknowledging that feeling is, one, keeping the energy moving through it, you know, through the body. It's like, okay, I'm having this feeling. Now I'll honor it as opposed to, well, if there's something doesn't feel right about it, but you go ahead anyway. You know, like you watch the people in the horror movies, it's like you can tell they're going, oh no, I shouldn't go into that room because,
yeah, why,
you know, it's
you
really bad. And then they go anyway. And then they get killed.
The
I mean,
with a candle. Yes, I know what you mean. But that's exactly why directors put that in there, because That's exactly opposite of what every one of us would do, in that if we heard a growl out of our basement, we would not go down in the basement with a candle.
And then our shoe would fall off, and then we would trip down the stairs.
Yes.
And then die. You know, but it's the same energy. It's like we get that feeling, and for a lot of people, we don't pay attention.
So this is like the clarion warning that something isn't right, or something is really nice about this person. They haven't said a word, but I just feel love from them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That is great.
You know, but it's all on a body level. We don't really understand why, but it just has this feeling.
Hmm. And, you know, now that I think about it, that's actually where the feeling comes from. It's not in my head. It's not in my heart or my chest. It's in that lower abdomen area.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
So that's clairsentience. And so I'm sure by now everyone that's listening is going, oh, that's happened to me.
That's the idea.
That is. But see, I mean, that's why I tell people, it's like, you know, I don't teach you to be psychic because you already are. Because when you have that experience and you have that feeling, you are having a psychic experience. That is a psychic experience.
So now we have 250,000 psychics out
That's
there.
Right.
Listen to X-Squared Radio, and I'm your host, Bruce Agnew, and our guest is Dr. Rita Louise, PhD, author of Avoiding the Cosmic 2x4, and her website is soulhealer.com. And we're going to conclude our second hour. We'll take about a 45-second break. I believe that's how long our third hour intro music is. And we'll let everybody get a drink of water, and we'll come back and complete our program. Rita Louise, PhD, Avoiding the Cosmic 2x4 is her book. I highly recommend it. I have read it. I've dog-eared it. I've got post-it notes sticking out of it. This is a great book. And you can get it by going to her website, which is soulhealer.com. Or you could pick it up at Amazon. Or you could really do the universe a big favor by walking into your local bookstore and saying, hey, we need to carry Dr. Rita Louise's book, Avoiding the Cosmic 2x4. This is really good stuff. And we have been discussing her book. I want to make a mention of my book with my co-author, E.J. Clark. Volume 2 of The Arc of Millions of Years comes out in about 4 weeks. Of course, you'll be able to get it first from our website at arcofmillionsofyears.com. Make sure to spell that like Noah's Ark with a K. And if you buy Volume 1 this month, we'll give you a 10% discount on Volume 2. The first volume explains where we came from. The second volume explains why we are here and where we could be going from here. The series will get you ready for the events leading up to what many think is the 2012 Earth Change. I call it a metamorphosis of the human race. The race of mankind is on a threshold. Many people feel that even if you haven't studied it. And we kind of get the feeling, and if we look at ancient history, that we've been here before and failed, blew ourselves up. Well, we're trying to get the world ready with this radio program so we won't destroy ourselves at this time. We want you to read both books. So let's get reading. Also, if you liked our bumper music, that is a band called Cell Dweller. Mr. Clayton and his band have done a superb job at tapping into the powerful emotion of music and lyrics, and all the lyrics are clean. I've checked them out myself. It's a style of music that today they call industrial music. It has a tremendous amount of energy to it, not just in the lyrics and the way the lyrics are sung, but also in the way the music is put together and supports the message of the lyric. I think you'll really like the album, and you can get it at celldweller.com. I highly recommend it. Good folks. Good expression of energy, which is what we're talking about this evening with our guest, Dr. Rita Louise. We were, I believe, getting ready to talk about the third chakra, which we likened to a comm port or a conduit between four energy bodies that are outside our physical body, the etheric, the emotional, the mental, and the causal body, being our connection with the spiritual and our soul. So let's get to talking about the third chakra.
Hello again. You know, something that we didn't talk about, which I think, just one little quick point before we talk about the third chakra.
Oh, okay.
The information that we've been talking about the energy and the different bodies and the movement of energy through the chakras, et cetera, mm-hmm. are found in the religious and philosophical philosophies of both Jewish mysticism and the yogic chakra text. And so even though we're using the word chakra, there is a direct relationship and a direct correlation to Jewish mysticism.
Huh.
And there actually is another correlation to Chinese medicine, another area that I need to study more, because I know there's a connection, I just don't know what exactly, because they view things in a slightly different way, and I haven't connected the dots. And so, you know, I think it's important for people to realize that, you know, what I'm saying is not me just making stuff up, that there really is, you know, religious traditions, there are things that we interact with in the physical world that reflect what I'm talking about in the energetic system. You know what I mean? There's a lot of predating or precipitating material to support this conversation.
Yes, one of the things I wanted to make clear to the listeners is that this, and I'm going to call it a science, has only recently been translated into English. These sciences are ancient, and they have been vetted over dozens and dozens of centuries of study, of revelation, of even trial and error, and they have been written down very carefully, systematically, and tested over many, many, many situations. So this is the fact, and I'm going to call it a fact because this is obviously a direct observation made by those that organize this information so we can understand it. And a direct observation is a fact that there is a spiritual world, a dimensional world, and a physical world in which our spirits, our souls exist. And there's no longer denying that. Just saying seeing is believing, or if I can hold it in my hands, then it's real, that doesn't cut it anymore. Everybody must realize that there are great forces at work in the universe, and we're part of it. And this is our ability, our natural ability, to fit into, interpret, and even affect that force.
That's right. And actually, I'm going to add on to that. You know, I mean, everybody is familiar with a radio or a television. You know, I mean, everybody has one. Use one, you know, learn how to turn it on and off. But if you think about it, and if you think about it, in the air, the world around us is filled with electromagnetic radiation. There's radio being broadcast and television and cell phones and cordless phones and wireless web and, you know, there's all kinds of stuff floating around us that we don't see and we can't touch and we can't interface with and we can't just like reach our hand up and go, oh, I'm feeling a microwave and it's at, you know, 900 hertz. You know, I mean, we're not capable of doing that. However,
not with our physical bodies.
With our physical bodies.
Huh.
However, if you use that as a correlation to subtle energy and subtle energy movement, it makes it make a whole lot of sense. Because as human beings, it's like we send, receive, and assimilate information from the world around us. And so as senders, we are like the television station that is sending out a broadcast. It's sending out a TV broadcast. And it's just going out, you know, it's not going, you know, there's not a wire connecting it to our house. You know, it's just going out into the air. And so the only way for us to receive that is to have a specialized piece of equipment that can extract that information and that data from the environment. And that's our television set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, but we can't see the television signal, but we recognize that it's there because we can see the results of it.
I see.
You know, we don't know how it works, particularly. You know what I mean? But we know that if we turn the TV on, we'll have a TV station.
And so the fact that this, well, it's been broadcasted from a TV station, but one of the things that I picked up on is that you yourself can also be that broadcaster.
Well, I mean, we all broadcast and we all receive, so we have both sets of equipment. And so I always kind of joke around, you know, because, and we're going to talk about this more, that the fifth chakra is about hearing. It's about verbal, where the sixth chakra is more about visual.
Mm.
So on, you know, in that kind of mind state, it's like the fifth chakra is associated with radio transmission and that vibration, where the sixth chakra, which is higher up, is more associated with television. And so you can't hear your TV on your radio, and you can't listen to radio on your TV, even though they're both picking up electronic frequencies from the world.
I got you. And there's even more information out there that's...
You know, so if I'm upset, so we were talking about second chakra, so if I'm upset because my boyfriend just dumped me, and I'm on my pity potty, and I am broadcasting, I'm on my pity potty, feel sorry for me, woo, 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 and I'm sending all that energy out to the universe, somebody around me is going to pick it up and go, are you okay?
Yeah.
But it's not that they necessarily ask me, and it might not even be that I have a look on my face, but they will feel it.
Interesting.
Because we're broadcasting, and they're receiving.
Well, I'm going to... I don't know if this is the place to talk about it. Let's move on.
Okay.
And I made a note. I'm
going
to bring something up that's a pretty interesting that goes along with that. It's a question I have, and I hope I formulated it correctly, but let's move on.
Okay. Third chakra has to do with power. Now, it doesn't have necessarily like a psychic kind of ability, because as we said, there were only four chakras that had psychic abilities. But the power space is all about our ability to use power for ourselves and use power in relationship to other people. And so, like, people that we know that are, like, control freaks have big third chakra.
I see.
Where people that are more like the doormat people have very small third chakras. You know, but the third chakra is also many people, and I'm going to say the majority of people that are depressed, have third chakra issues. And I say that because they are not using their energy for something that they want. And if you talk to them, there is always something that they want to do, they would rather be doing, and they're not doing, that is influencing their ability for their third chakra to operate correctly.
Well, that being said, there's nothing wrong with being depressed from time to time. It's sort of an emotional journey that every healthy person takes. But I think what you're talking about are people that are clinically depressed. Yeah, they're just down all the time.
You know,
you're saying that their third chakra is just shrunk down to nothing.
You know, from a very Kabbalistic point of view, it is where the Sephira split, and there's willpower on one side and then the energy of passion on the other side. And so when you talk about the energy of passion, it's, you know, when you sit down to do a piece of artwork, or, you know, like me, I'll sit there and start working on my webpage, which, you know, unless I'm being really cranky about it, but I'll still sit there for hours at a time and go, oh my God, or, you know, you play an internet game, you know, like World of Warcraft, and it's like 2 o'clock in the morning, you're like, oh my God, it was just six. But that's passion, you know, there's an energy, there's a fire. Now, sometimes it can be too much, and that's when you get, like, your stalkers, you know, and your road rage people, because they have too much passion.
So when we talk about, like, we ask the question sometimes, who in the world would want to be president of the United States? Well, they talk about this fire in the belly.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you're talking about.
This is what I'm talking about. It's like they have a lot of control energy. They are sending their energy out. You know, my husband laughs at me because when I'm not presenting or I'm not doing something, he goes, you know, sometimes you just really suck your energy in and just like keep it really close to you. He goes, but then you get in front of a room. I go, yeah, I own it. I totally will own a space.
I was talking to somebody the other day, and we were talking about obstacles to success, and I was kind of complaining that, you know, sales had slowed down and I didn't have any lectures lined up for a while and blah, blah, blah. And she said, well, you just kind of have to let that things like that happen. You know, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And I said, well, you know, I kind of grab the universe with both hands and crack it over my knee and open it up and then, you know, make things happen. I don't wait for things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both ways are right. To a certain extent, we can force our way through the universe and waste a lot of energy and not get very much done, or we could be sensitive to it and then act when the time is right.
And they're really just, you know, and I think the bigger point is having that balance, because on the other side, as I was saying, was willpower, you know. And, you know, when I think of willpower, it's usually about the things that you have to do, you know. And balancing my checkbook, doing taxes, cleaning the bathroom are like right at the top of that list, you know, of things you have to do but you don't want to do.
Yes.
You know, and so sitting there and going out and grasping the golden ring kind of go, because you are using your energy to make it happen.
Right.
With the passion, it's like the energy is just, it's like it's coming into you where this is going out of you. And there needs to be a balance between the two, or else, like the people with depression, as an example, they're stuck in willpower. It's like there is no passion in their life.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything that's fun.
Well, I also see this with people that have addictions. Like, I guess people laugh about it, but they say things like, you know, I got stoned and I missed it. I was going to do this, but I got high and I just didn't get it done. And I see people with an addictive personality, or not addictive personality, but an addiction, and they give up before they ever get started.
There's a lot of people that don't have addictions that do that.
Well, people that they drop out of high school, or they quit college without graduating, or they, you know, stop at a 2-year degree and then complain for the rest of their life mm-hmm. they're not making enough money. And I say, well, why don't you go back and get your bachelor's?
Because they're not listening.
You know, I went back and got 2 bachelor's degrees, and I had 4 children at home.
But the bigger thing is that they're not listening.
Yeah.
It's like they're choosing to not, and they bitch about it. You know, it's not – it's interesting. You know, one of the stories that I tell in the book, it's about Fran and Justin. Well, I'm going to tell you a little secret. Fran is me. I changed my name to protect myself.
I guess that.
And my stepson was failing all of his classes, all of his major classes, math, science, history, Spanish, and something else. and he had to sit at the kitchen table. That was his life. He came home from school, and he sat at the kitchen table, and he was supposed to study. He couldn't read books. He couldn't watch TV. He couldn't play any games. He just had to sit at the kitchen table to pass. And once he started having passing grades in all of his courses, he could get up from the table. 6 months. He sat at the table for 6 months.
Wow.
Now, he was in the Gifted and Talented program, which is the honors program.
Uh-huh.
He got kicked out. I mean, very, very smart young man, but he had no desire. And when there's no desire, you can't put fire to it. Desire is part of the second chakra.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so if there's no desire, you can't light it. If there's no carrot, you can't go after it. And if the carrot's there and you say, well, it's too much effort, then that's a desire issue and not a passion issue.
Perfectly clear. Sort of like finishing your book. I mean, you could have got to a point where you said, I got all these ideas and I formulated them so well, but I'm halfway done with my book and I'm going to give up. I mean, writing a book is a tremendous accomplishment.
I mean, this
writing
is number two.
Writing a good book is really tough.
I mean, for me, you know, I'm really into that listening that we talked about before, you know, and Spirit says, you need to do this. You need to do this. You know, and I'll talk about more about that in the fifth chakra. So let me just zip and we'll just move on.
Okay. We're moving on to the fourth.
Okay. Fourth chakra, again, there's not a psychic ability associated with it, but the fourth chakra is where I like explaining it from a Kabbalistic point of view, because if you sit there and you look at the tree of life, it's like every other sephira, which are the spheres, connect into that sephira, except for the one at the very bottom, which is associated with the first chakra.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is the clearinghouse, and it is the balancing point. And in chakra literature, it's about balance and it's about affinity. And so if you sit there and you put yourself in that place, it's like you can go and check in on everything. And that's what I like to share with people when I talk about this, is about checking in. Because it's above the third chakra, which is associated with the primal brain and instincts. The fourth chakra is about reflection. It's about saying, well, what about me? What do I think? What do I want? You know, and I go, you know, it sounds kind of big-headed, you know, but if we can't honor and respect ourselves, we can't honor and respect anybody else either. You know, and so, you know, for years after reading like millions of books on the chakras, you know, they're like four chakras about affinity and you're supposed to basically give it all away. I mean, that's kind of the impression that you get, you know, oh, you're supposed to do it without expectation of a return. But you know what? That's a bunch of crap. or maybe like Jewish people just don't do that. You know what I mean? I don't know. But, I'm half Jewish, so I can make these jokes. Sorry.
I'm adopted.
Huh?
I'm adopted.
But, you know, but if you sit there and you think about it and you're giving it all away, there isn't an equal exchange of energy. The energy is going out of you and there's not anything ever recharging you.
I see.
You know what I mean? And that energy, because if you think about it, everything has to cycle. Everything oscillates like, there's a sine wave. Everything is based on a sine wave. And so if all we're doing is sending the energy out, we're not having the other end of the sine wave. It's never coming back in.
Yeah, you discharge. I in one of my early journals wrote, you know, I feel like I've given away so much of myself, there's nothing left for me.
Exactly. And so when I sit there and tell people, you know, and they look at me like, oh, my God, I can't believe that you're saying this. I go, it's all about me. You know, you have to think of that Toby Keith song, well, what about me? You know?
I love that song.
You know, but it's really true, because if you can sit there and say, well, is this important to me? Is this something I want to do? And then it gives you the opportunity to check in on your feelings. And check in on the thought process, or check in on, you know, it, because you're in that central place and you're able to access everything else.
I had a friend in business. Actually, he was lecturing, but I wasn't at one of his lectures, but we were talking. And he said, you know, if you really want to be successful, you have to create a clear vision of what that success is, and then you plan a way backwards to where you are. I call it my but first list. But first I got to do this, but first I got to do this. And then once you establish that path, each day when you wake up and go to the office or go to wherever it is you do what you do, you have to make a decision. Is it on the path or is it not on the path? Mm-hmm. And that way you don't get sidetracked and waste all your energy doing other things. That's not to say you don't stop and smell the roses along the way or spend time with your family and all that. That just means you have to construct your path correctly. But you have to stay on the path. And this clearinghouse, this way of checking yourself every hour or moment by moment or class by class, if you're in school, to make sure you're on the path to building what you have envisioned. Is that what you're describing?
Yes, very much so. You know, I call it the warm and fuzzies. You know, when you check in, you should have the warm and fuzzies. You know, and here's a Dr. Rita rule. I have rules. Here's the Dr. Rita rule of checking in. If it's yes, it's yes. If it's maybe, it's no. If it's no, it's no. Because there is no maybe. And my experience, and this literally is my experience, if it's yes, it's yes. If it's maybe, it's no.
Huh.
Because some part of you is not congruent with the answer. If all of you is congruent, it's yes. If there's some part of you that is not in agreement with what you're thinking about doing or whatever, you'll either get a maybe or a no.
I'll use that. My kids, sometimes my son will say, can I spend the night over at so-and-so's house? I'll think for a second, I'll go, no. Well, why? Well, of course, I teach them that, too. Never take no for an answer. Always make your case. But then I'll just say, you know what? I don't, at this moment, have an exact reason, but something tells me something's wrong. And I just think you should hang around the shanty tonight. And this particular night, it got pretty emotional. He wanted to go riding around with his friends. And I said, you know what? Nothing good happens after midnight.
How old?
So how about if you just hang out, we'll pop some popcorn and we'll talk for a while. Oh, he was mad. He was furious. But nevertheless, I had my way. Well, that night, the friends that he would have been riding around with in the back seat, they rolled that rodeo. And the friend that he would have been sitting in the back seat with got 4 stitches in his chin and a black eye. And I said, you see? He said, I see, Dad. I won't question you again.
I only wish. I only wish. Mine don't listen. I mean, they listen, but then they don't. And then sometimes they do, and it shocks me.
Well, mine obey, even if they're not listening.
Mine nag. They've learned don't nag me, because I check in, and I get an answer, and this is the answer, and this is the answer.
Well, I have kind of taught them to, you know, go ahead and make your case. At the end of the day, it's my decision. And if you make your case well enough and I feel like there's no real serious obstacle to you doing what you want to do, then I'll let you do it. And that's the way it is in life. You know, don't let somebody tell you, oh, that's never been done before. You can't do that. You know, make your case. And put your energy into it and make some planning and you'll be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm trying to teach them. Not that, you know, Dad's incorrigible and he will never ever let you have your way. That's just not the case at all. However, I may voice my opinion, my feeling about it. And as they make their case, I will take in that information and, like you say, I'll clear it, you know, through my, I guess now I realize it's my fourth chakra. And if it's maybe, now on, it's going to be no.
See, I'm big on the equal exchange of energy philosophy. You know, it's like, what have you done for me? Oh, okay. I guess I can do for you back.
Yes.
Because it's totally not a one-way. I'm the stepmom. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's totally not a one-way street here.
Yes, I know what you mean.
You know, so.
Wash the dishes and then you can go over to your friend's house.
That's right. And if you don't want to, don't go. Ah, see how simple that is?
So the fourth chakra is this main intersection.
That's correct. And that's where people, you know, even though it's not considered a psychic ability, I think that you can gain a lot of information by going to that place and checking into it. And actually, there is a quote, I don't know if it's in the book, it must be, that was related to this space, and it's a Kabbalistic quote, which is one of the things that I just love about that whole path, is just some of the lines they come up with are like, whoa. And the sentence is, and I will repeat it, is the Tepharith, which is the fourth chakra, is the reflection of God's will in the hearts of man. It's the reflection of God's will in the hearts of man. And so when you check in and you get that, the warm and fuzzies, you know, like, yeah, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, it is a reflection of God's will, and you will always be doing the things that are on your path.
Yes, and when you're aligned with that, I can see where you get this warm feeling, this glow in your bosom. And that's where this chakra is located, right? In the middle of the chest.
Correct.
So when...
Pretty smart, huh?
When the ancient scripture translates into, you will know it's true because you'll have a burning in your bosom, this is what they're talking about.
I guess so. That sounds about right to me.
It's kind of a... Well, you mentioned it earlier, an energy wholeness, feeling whole, like nothing's missing.
And from this place, you can sit there and analyze where there are things missing or where you are out of balance and move to get more in balance. You know, but the biggest thing is the listening, you know, and you listen and check in. You know, if you're not sure, you check in. Because then you know that you're congruent with yourself. And all disease, mental, physical, spiritual, any kind, is because there's an incongruence between what spirit wants us to do, what God wants us to do, whatever that inner message is, and what's going on the inside. Always. And so when we listen and we check in and we follow that information that's being given to us, that is how we recover. That's how we get rid of the incongruencies. That's how we heal.
You know, something just came to mind. I totally believe that what you say, that this is God's will materialized in the soul of man. Then if you have a person who is diametrically opposed to God, that is to say, they only want to tear down, destroy, kill, murder, then their whole sephiroth, their whole connection is out of balance. It's skewed because they've chosen not to do God's will. In fact, they've chosen to be the antithesis of it. And it's going to show up. If you're at all intuitive, you're going to see it.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, because I lecture on the Kabbalah and kind of the conversation we're having here. And on the Tree of Life, if you're looking at it on a piece of paper, if you go down the, I have to check hands here, the left-hand side of the tree, because if you think about it, when you're whole and when you're congruent with yourself, you're going down the middle pillar because that's the pillar of equilibrium.
Yes, it's
The separations is where we have choices. And so on a third chakra, a fifth chakra, and a sixth chakra level, we have choice. And so if you are going down the left-hand side, which is the side of will, it's like, well, you might be getting the information, but you're allowing your will, to overrun it. Now, the point I want to make is that from a tarot card place, the cards that sit on that path are ones such as the devil.
Oh, my goodness.
I think the death card sits in there. And one of my favorites is the tower, which is, you know, something happens and it shifts everything because of this calamity. Goes from, I think, the sephira on the fifth chakra into the heart.
Mm.
you know, and it creates balance. And I think anybody has had that experience where they are off in their own place and they've had a reality check.
And I'm trying to remember now. Isn't the tower, doesn't that align with the god of war, Mars? It seems to me.
See, it's in that memory thing with tarot cards, don't know.
I remember reading something about that warriors, those that that seek glory in battle, glory in war, not just the battle of business, but I mean the battle of the battlefield, the real one where you cut each other up with a knife. That is the god of war, Mars, and that's aligned with the tower. So,
I mean, I think it could be aligned with, because if you think about it, each path has two ends to it. It could be more in the dysfunctional side versus the coming back to the heart side. And so each of the major cards can have more than one planet associated with it.
I gotcha.
You know what I mean? Because if you're coming back into the heart, then there's not, you know, what I'm hearing from you is like there's a lot of ego attached, or there could be a lot of ego attached, you know, and it depends on where you're sitting on that line. It's like, are you doing it from a selfless place, or
yes,
are you doing it from a place of ego? And if you're doing it from a place of ego, you're going to sit more on that left-hand side.
Yes. And my point was that if you are at all intuitive, you can see this darkness. You can
mm-hmm.
see this disconnect with these individuals that are dedicated to this kind of expression of their life, or I'm going to call them terrorists or murderers or rapists or child molesters or whatnot. They have chosen with their free will to not do God's will. They have chosen to misalign themselves with God. And so this fourth chakra is shifted over on that left side.
Correct.
Wow.
Correct. Well, it's not that the fourth chakra has shifted. It is that everything around it has shifted.
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean? It's like...
So it's absolute, but you could move yourself off of it.
Correct, because you can sit there and be out in left field. You know, your ideas are out in left field. I mean, I think that's a pretty good
that's
comparison.
That's an analogy. Very good analogy. So that brings us to, since we need to know what God's will is, that brings us to the fifth chakra.
So the fifth chakra is all about communication of any sort. And, you know, it used to be that I could never talk about the fifth chakra because I didn't really hear that much information. And I wasn't really open clairaudiently, you know, even though in hindsight, you know, they've always been nagging me about stuff, but I'm only aware of it now. And, you know, it's kind of funny even how that whole thing started, because it was something that I had been, you know, kind of meditating on, like just wanting to have that happen. And I was at a psychic fair. I used to run a psychic fair. And so I was working with a client. I had other people that took the money and did all that stuff. And so I was working. And I'm doing a session with this woman, and then all of a sudden this booming voice off to the side above me was like, don't tell her that. And in the middle of the session, I felt so stupid. I stopped, looked up into the air, and said, what? Had this little conversation, and then went back. It's like, excuse me, but this is what they want me to tell you. And, we've had a love-hate relationship ever since.
Oh, with that person, you mean?
With whoever that is.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, because this is, you know, here's another Dr. Rita rule. It's like, with the art of listening, if it lasts for more than a week, it's spirit trying to get your attention.
Boy.
Okay, so if it's something that you just think of and it goes away, you know, like, well, I think I want some ice cream. And it goes away. It's a thought. You know, it's something that's happening in that moment. You know, it's part of the mental function, which a lot of people think is spirit. You know what I mean? There's a lot of confusion. And so to help separate it and make it so that you're not confused, the Dr. Rita rule is, if it lasts more than a week, it's spirit.
So, wow, this just opens another reveal anything about myself, because that's not what we're here for. But if you have, and I'm going to try to make this as relational to my listeners as I can, if you get an impression, or say you have a dream that's vivid with color and sound and feeling and emotion, and you have the same dream over and over and over again, and it's a preparatory dream, preparing you for an informational dream, then, and that lasts for a month or 2 months, are we talking about somebody or something trying to get through to you?
I mean, I would assume so. I'm so not a dream person. My husband laughs because I lay on the bed and, you know, you can have the light on, the TV can be on, there could be like a parade walking through the room. I'm out. But
I'm the same way.
You know, but I do have a couple of dreams that like repeat. You know, like I'm going back to where I spent my first 2 years in college, and you know, I keep going back there to go to school, which I don't understand. And you know, and this whole thing about school, and I'm like, hey, I thought you told me I didn't have to go to school anymore, finally, after 40 years of freaking school. But anyway, I mean, I would assume so, but I can't give you a definitive answer. You know, I do know that little naggy voice that you get in the back, you know, like I lived in Seattle for a while, and every time I would go onto the patio or the second floor patio and I'd look in the yard, I would get, you need to put a planting bed in. I'd be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Then I go in, you know, a couple days later I go out, you need to put a planting bed in. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Whatever. Actually, ooh. I have a good story. This is even better. So I used to drive, and not that long ago, a 89 Celica. It was red. Good car. I mean, it went really fast. And I had, like, driven up on a curb or something, but I had a flat tire, and my spare tire, which was a full-size spare, I had driven up on a curb. And so it had, like, a bunch of those, like, weight things on it, you know, to balance the tire. But it was okay for a spare, you know what I mean? But the rim was kind of dented, but it still worked. But anyway. And so, you know, it was a full-size spare, so I wasn't on a micro spare. So I just kind of drove it around on the spare. And if I went really fast, the car would kind of wobble a little bit, and I would just be like, mm. And so pretty much every time I got into it, Spirit, see, this was my deciding moment on the listening factor. Spirit would say, you need to get a new tire. And I go, yeah, 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 maybe this weekend. Yeah, sure, this weekend. Well, 3 months later, I'm, you know, I get in the car and, you know, I'm still driving on that spare. And I was driving down the freeway going to a meeting at 8 o'clock in the morning. Actually, it was 7:30 on a Saturday morning, and I was running a little late again. And, you know, so I was doing 80-ish down the freeway.
80-ish. On that spare.
And so I'm driving, and I got, you need to change the tire. And so, needless to say, I slowed down. And I looked up at whoever, and I said, okay, but, you know, today's not a good day to die. And I drove to my meeting very carefully and swore I was going to get the tire changed. Get back in my car to drive home, and I'm like, okay, okay, I really am going to go get the tire changed. Really, really, not a good day to die. Okay, so I get home, and in Texas, you don't park, your driveway is not in the front of the house. They have these weird alleys, and you pull down the alley, and that's where your driveway is.
Mm.
And so I pull into the alley, and we're about five houses in from the corner, and there's my husband's truck up on a jack. He had a flat tire. And so I'm thinking to myself, oh, well, maybe I just picked up that he had a flat tire, and it's really not my tire, and blah, blah, blah. That's the conscious mind jumping in the middle of everything, trying to rationalize.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feared, well, you know, it was pretty strong, and he didn't have a spare tire. So we took my car with the funky spare tire on it over to the tire place and got new tires and got his tire fixed and whatever. So now I had, and they were Firestones, and so what was happening was all my tires eventually ended up blowing out. But anyway, so I got the tire fixed. And so you would think the story ended there, but no, it doesn't. So the next day, I took my stepkids to their mother's house, who lives about 70 miles northeast of us.
Mm-hmm.
And on the map, it looked like if I went down this one road that I would end up in this where my sister-in-law lived. And my niece lived, and her mom was coming into town, and I was going to go to lunch with them. And I said, well, that would be a nice little shortcut. It sure was.
A long cut is what it turned
out
to be.
It took me over an hour to get down this strip road, and then it left me in Gainesville, Texas, which I didn't even know there was a Gainesville, Texas, which was about 30 miles north of where I needed to be. So now I got my new tire on, and so I'm going down the freeway, and there were four 18-wheelers backed up, one right behind each other, and there were two lanes of road. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to pass them. And so by that time, I'm doing about 90 so I can get past these trucks, because they were going kind of fast enough, but not quite fast enough. And so halfway through, it's like, well, my steering is kind of stiff. And so I get past the trucks, and I'm like, well, there's an exit. I think I'll get off. Get off, stopped at Jack in the Box, went and used their restroom because I had been driving now for like 3 hours. Came out, and the other front tire was flat.
Oh.
So I go next door to the gas station, and no one can change my tire, and I'm parked over by the air filling thing, and, you know, and I could feel that the air was coming out between the steel belts, like a lot. And so, you know, I went back, and I wasn't really sure what I was going to do. And at that point in time, these two guys were in a car, and they were using the air pump, and they said, well, you know, there's still time if you want to use it. And I looked at them, I go, no amount of time is going to fill that tire. And they go, oh, you got a flat? And I said, yeah. They go, oh, well, we'll change it for you. So they went in my trunk, got my spare, changed my tire.
Oh, the spare that was on the other side that you had now changed that
tire.
So now your spare is back in
the trunk. Ever got my story. And so the moral of the story is, had I not got the tire changed, I would have been in Gainesville, Texas, which was over 100 miles from my house, with no cell phone, basically out in the middle of nowhere. But now I had a spare.
And no tire. Yeah, you would have been out there with no tire because you've been riding on your spare and your other one was flat in the trunk.
So after that, I listen. And so that's where the Dr. Rita rule came from. And actually, when you listen, life goes so much smoother.
Smoother. I can't tell you how many times I've pulled off to the side of the road, and I'm not supposed to. I mean, it's not part of the plan. My wife will say, why are you pulling off here? Because we need to be off the road for the next 5 or 6 minutes. And most of the time, nothing happens. And she'll say, well, nothing happened. And I'll say, that's because we were off the road. But a few times, and I mean more than once, there has been an accident or in one case, going through I-40, which goes twisty through the Smoky Mountains, there was a rock slide. Now, how often do rock slides happen? Not very often. But something told me to take the road over the mountain instead of going that way, and I would have been stuck in that I-40 probably for 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that you say in your book, and it's just an excellent quote. I underlined it. About this chakra. It is here that we are able to transform our thoughts, concerns, creative ideas, opinions, feelings, and even emotions into a set of symbols that we, and this is the key, collectively understand.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say this is the communication chakra, this is how we, I'm going to say, hear. This is how we hear it. This
but it's
voice.
Also how we communicate with one another.
Ah.
You know, and so I like to, you know, the example I use in the book is, okay, so I'm thinking of a car. And it's a red, two-door, convertible sports car.
Mm-hmm.
So can you think of what kind of car I'm thinking? Now, I know you read the book, so that's kind of cheating. But
a Vet or a Porsche?
Neither. I'm thinking of a Mercedes 450 SL with a removable top.
That's right.
You know, and so through the use of communication, it's like I did describe the car, saying it's a two-door convertible sports car. However, by changing and giving you a specific word, a word that everybody recognizes to one extent or another, it gave you a very specific image and interface that you could sit there and go, oh, I know what you're talking about.
Exactly right. It's a universal language.
Well, I don't know if a Mercedes 450 SL is a universal language, but... You know, but it's something that, you know, we're all taught that when we see this thing that's a piece of fruit and it's red and it has a little stem and maybe two little leaves on it, it's an apple. You know,
I was thinking strawberry.
Well, it could, but, you know, I'm trying to, like, describe the image, you know what I mean? But
I gotcha.
You know, and so it is a, you know, but that's something we're taught. It's not something that's innate in us. It's something that we learn and are taught throughout our lives, you know. And so, like, even with you know, I was talking about the my girlfriend with the kidney thing, it's like, you know, that vocabulary, the psychic vocabulary, started out as a glop of black energy, but as I had more words and I could put words to images and, you know, et cetera, it became something very specific.
All right, let's talk about the fifth chakra.
That was fifth, sixth.
Oh, so the fifth is this cause and effect. And people say what comes around goes around, or this produces bad karma, this produces good karma.
Well, the fifth chakra is all about where we have the power to choose.
Ah.
You know, because we can, you know, we can choose, as I said before, we can choose to listen or we can choose to not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so whether that listening is from a feeling place or whether that listening is from a auditory place or whether that listening is from a checking in place or through visual imagery, you know, depending on what comes to us the strongest, because we all have different gifts, you know, it's all about that choice. And we make that choice in the fifth chakra.
And when, well, that's all about being godlike is maintaining and being given free will. And if we choose to align ourselves with what's good, then we become good. If we choose to align ourselves with bad, it's almost impossible to become good.
You know, but, you know, kind of like it's really about the ego part. You know, am I going to align myself? Is what is in it that's the best for me, or what do we need? You know, what is needed? What do we need? You know what I mean? Taking myself into inclusion, you know, as opposed to ignoring everything else and just taking in a little aspect of it.
Ah, gotcha. All right. We're coming up on the end of the hour here, so let's move on to
I'll
the
be
sixth
quick.
Chakra.
Okay, and we've kind of talked about the sixth chakra a little. Sixth chakra is the where we have our clairvoyance, and it's the ability to see mental images. And so, as I said before, the ability to see our mother's face, to see our house, to see our car, that's where we have that ability of clairvoyance. And so a lot of the times it's like we get information that way. We see little movies in our head, you know, or have an image or an impression about something. I mean, when I'm working with clients, it's like I just sit there and say, well, let's see what's going on with your kidney, and I'll just see this picture, and it's either a healthy, you know, it's either looks like the textbook or not, you know, and it looks like how it looks.
You say in your book that the chakma is unbridled energy and unlimited potential, and then I drew an arrow over to the other page where it says, our ability to receive and process information on sixth chakra levels is called clairvoyance, and clairvoyance means clear seeing or clear vision. So this is like your third eye, your mind's eye.
That's correct. You know, and so when we receive the information that way, a lot of the times we think it's our imagination, and we're just making stuff up.
Well, this is kind of what I treat the Earth explorers of X Squared Radio, that their potential is unlimited, that their ability to see the universe in all its glory is absolutely unlimited if they'll just uncork it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that is part of the creative process, which is a whole separate conversation, where in order to set an intention out, there needs to be an image around it. When you're doing energy work, it's like there needs to be a form. You know what I mean? And that's on a chakra level where we create that form. You know, and so there is kind of a correlation to the mental body, but it's different.
Mm. Yes, yes, that's exactly right.
Okay.
The seventh chakra is in the top of your head.
That's correct. And it's associated with the clairconsciousness, which is the ability of knowing, where you just know stuff. You don't know how you know, you just know. I mean, people are like, well, how do you know how to do that? It's like, I don't know. I just...
Well, you remember...
How do you sit and fix your distributor? I don't know. Here, let's just do this. And you just do it, you know?
Yes.
I mean, you know, my kids are like, what's for dinner? It's like invention number 365. I have no idea. It's just this.
Turn the mold 15 degrees.
That's right. You know, and men tend to operate more on that level of information. It's like you don't... And on a seven chakra level, you don't know how you know. And I say that for a very specific reason, is because the seventh chakra sits above the brain and the cognitive processes, and it has to come down to the sixth chakra in order for you to have an image of it.
Can you actually see that too?
See what?
I mean, can you, when you look at someone intuitively, can you see whether their seventh chakra is working or not working?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's easy. You know, what they're channeling through, maybe, yeah, I see that too. you know, I mean, because there are energy systems that move through the body, which, you know, we kind of touched on that with moving through the different bodies, you know, energetic bodies, but there's also energy systems that go through the physical body and through the energetic bodies, which we haven't even touched. You know, and so the seventh chakra is kind of like the power input, you know, and this line of energy goes through the body with the grounding cord being like the ground. And so the energy goes through.
A total connection.
It's a total connection. And it does loop. It's really more DC or AC, where it cycles both ways, up in and up and down.
Wow.
But for reality and safety, you know, for ease of understanding, it primarily comes in through the seventh, and it goes down to the ground. That's the easiest way of trying to explain it.
So the cosmic 2x4, which I assume it doesn't mean you're going to build a house with it. It means you're being hit in the head with it.
Well, unless you're some people that look at the cover and go, 2x4?
Yeah. Well, being a carpenter, I understand what a 2x4 is.
But I mean, that's always my favorite, and it's like, okay, what planet did you come from? You're obviously not from Earth, right? okay, what's the question?
What is the cosmic 2x4, and in 10 minutes, can you tell us how to avoid it?
Sure. I mean, we've been kind of talking about that for quite a while now. The cosmic 2x4, and I said this before, but I'll repeat it. It's like when we experience disease in the physical body or emotional discomfort, mental discomfort, any kind of discomfort, you know, whether it be physical, emotional, spiritual, whatever, that is our body or our psyche trying to give us the sign that there's something wrong. And so if we sit there and choose not to listen to the messages that we're being given, it's like the universe will give us the cosmic 2x4, with physical disease being the ultimate manifestation of something being wrong.
Hmm. So discomfort is sort of like the warning sign, and disease is actually the 2x4.
Well, I mean, sometimes we can get the 2x4 in emotional places. You know what I mean? If we're in an abusive relationship and we choose to stay in it, even though that little voice is going, what the hell are you doing? You need to get out of here. Brr, 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 brr. You know, he shouldn't treat you that way. And you choose and you choose and you choose to stay. You know what I mean? The 2x4 could come around and have him leave you because he met somebody else.
I got you.
You know what I mean? So it's not only in physical disease, but it's kind of like the tower. You know, when I was explaining to people originally what this was about, it was the energy of the tower in tarot cards. You know, it's kind of like you can choose to stay on the path that you're on, or you can sit there and have the universe come and shake up your world. And for many people, not my dad, for many other people, once those things happen, you know, especially with the biggies, cancer, you know, like that, it will be a sign that they need to make changes. You know, and so you can choose to change or you can choose not to. And if you choose not to, it just can get deeper and more ingrained, et cetera, et cetera.
So if you're cognizant and you're listening, and now we've got the skill set, or at least we know what book to buy to get the skill set, we can avoid the cosmic 2x4 by listening to the discomfort and interpreting, knowing what it's saying to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we can take corrective action before we end up with a 3.5-inch bruise across our forehead.
Or something worse.
Or something worse, right.
You know, and like we were talking before, you know, using the example of going in and talking to your boss, you know, or getting that project dumped on you. You know, I mean, I've had a number of situations where something will happen and it'll upset me. You know, and I think we've all had that situation. Something happened, it upsets us, but instead of sitting there and resolving it either with the person that it originated with, it's like we just sit there and go, oh, well, I'll get over it. I'll get over it. And we just stuff it.
And then eventually it manifests itself
as something else, yeah.
That is just close to home for everybody, I think. Our guest tonight has been Dr. Rita Louise, the author of Avoiding the Cosmic 2x4. Her website is soulhealer.com. I highly advise you to go to her website, buy the book, or go to Amazon or your local bookstore and tell them they need to stock the book. I have thoroughly enjoyed the last 3 hours and would like to say, my Earth friends and fellow explorers, I want you to remember who you are and that everything we do will eventually affect the universe. So try to do it on purpose. And also remember, next week our guest is going to be one of the world's great experts on crop circles, Lucy Pringle. Will continue our exploration into the truths of the universe that may set us free. I would like to repeat my open call, which I have on my website, for any evidence of off-world activity on Earth today. We want to know the truth. If you know, I want to talk to you. Because the 14 million people a week that listen to the BBS radio network want to know the truth. Remember, if it's not mainstream, it's on BBS radio. My thanks, my heartfelt thanks to our guest tonight, Dr. Rita Louise. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
This is great.
And to my wonderful producer, Don, I wish you all peace and good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.